and the way you look, all the things you do, you drive me crazy. Drive me crazy.
The new number one song on the Sideshow Countdown, Sick from Adelita Sway. We'll be back next week with more stories from the road. My six picks, a blast from the past. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next week, freaks.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead, stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Most WRIF contests are open to legal U.S. residents at least 18 years old. Winners may win only one contest every 30 days or every 6 months for prizes worth $600 or more. Employees and their family of Greater Media Detroit, its advertising agencies, and other radio stations in the metro area may not participate. No purchase necessary. Prizes are not transferable, and rules are subject to change at any time. Complete rules are available online at WRIF.com or at the WRIF studios during regular business hours.
Now.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. I don't even know why I'm laughing. Hi, Jalene. Welcome back.
Peter, thank you. Good to be here. Good to be back.
Yeah, you missed two Sundays.
I know. It's crazy. I had some serious schooling I was taking care of.
I know.
And, everyone's got to further their world sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I wish we could tell them what it was. She's going to be a brain surgeon, folks.
Yes, my gosh. And, yeah, but they all knew that.
And she's going to operate on me. On the air. So look out for that.
I've been paid by Republicans to try to rework your wiring up there.
They had all those 30s horror films. They would transfer brain. Take the brain of the gorilla.
Right. Put it in,
Hey, this is a phone-in talk show. It's been happening here on WRIF for over 40 years. Can you imagine that?
Gosh.
This is the longest running, our Mr. Announcer says, the longest running talk show in Detroit. It's actually the longest running talk show in American radio history, although it's only been on Sunday night, so it doesn't get the creds it deserves.
As a weekday show. Well, one time, weren't you on weekdays? Or
Way back in the day, yeah, Night Call was on 5 days a week. Oh, was I crazy.
Yeah, well, you and I, we did it 5 days a week.
And we were crazy. That was a nationally syndicated show.
Yes, it was.
Right, we got nuts from all over the country.
Yes.
And we had nutty bosses.
Oh, we did.
We did.
We have cool bosses.
We actually do. Everybody, they probably think, cool. Oh, yeah, you kiss asses, But these are, without a doubt, the best people I have ever worked for. You listening, guys?
Sure.
I'm going to be in your office tomorrow asking for a raise.
Here.
Anyway, are we on the air?
Oh. Paul McCartney tonight in
Paul
Detroit.
Paul McCartney, yeah.
I want to say a big night for, to the riff rockers out there. A lot of people, no doubt, leaving the show now and coming home, and here we are.
Yeah,
so
expecting
to
hear Maybe I'm Amazed instead.
Yeah,
you're gonna get.
Well, they heard it on the way.
They did.
And they heard it during the show.
They did.
And now this show, like you said, 40 years. Some people just discover it for the first time. Like, what is this? Who are these people?
Paul McCartney heard all this. I mean, he's been in the Detroit area, but he last played in Detroit proper, I think, in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, definitely. And he drove by our staff.
And there
and
was.
Waved out the window, and what a thrill I bet that was.
Yeah, that's nice photos of him.
Yes.
Anyway, this is the Night Call program. I'm Peter Werby. Jalene Jordan is my co-host. I'm her co-host. And our number is 313-298-WRIF. And for those of you without letters on your phone...
Yeah, if you don't have that rotary, or 313-298-9743.
You know that? You know, you... Has anyone else ever talked about this?
No, I'm it. I have my moments.
Here's the deal. All of the, I don't know about the other radio stations, but our sister station, WCSX.
I think it's most radio stations.
Yeah, they just use their call letters. So people, if you say 313-298-WRIF, I mean, it is, you got to kind of peck around there anyway. But if you don't, if you have, and so many young people don't have landlines.
Yeah.
So, well, that's why we got to tell them it's
9743.
There you go.
Yeah.
If you'd like to join us on Facebook, we'd love to have you as a friend. It's facebook.com/nightcall. And we'll have a podcast available. If you call 313-298-9743, you will reach either Athena or Sarah, and they'll get you on the air. And we're going to talk about, well, we've been having such a good time up till right now. Are guys, is it okay for guys to cry these days? I mean, I know it is in your book, but just generally in the culture.
Guys should cry.
I mean, well, I know, but... What's it look like in the general culture? Is it cool or uncool? I'm trying to decide whether to fess up or not.
Yeah, well, I don't think it matters.
Okay.
Who cares?
I mean, I was at one point, I was wondering, I mean, I was both crying tears of sadness. It's so, this mass killing in Norway.
Yeah.
Where this right-wing Christian nationalist, this
That's
terrorist.
That's what they call him. Why do they call
him that? They don't call him a terrorist.
Because he's white.
Yeah, they don't call him a terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
They call him an extremist.
Right.
You got to be a Muslim to be a terrorist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Isn't that a bunch of...
Yeah. Well, I figure most of you know by now this Norwegian guy was charged on Saturday with these attacks in Oslo, the capital of Norway. It killed at least 92 people, and he first set off this bomb. And then he went to this island and killed people for an hour and a half.
Yeah, 92
or 93.
Something like that.
You know, it's funny.
Terrible.
I just saw it and made me so profoundly sad to think about these young people that were so enthusiastic about life and about politics and making a difference in the world in which they live. And Norway's a pretty cool place to begin with.
I'm of Norwegian descent.
So. Yeah.
Yes, ufta.
Yeah. What's that mean?
It means kind of anything.
Oh, what is it? Ufta?
Ufta.
Ufta.
Yeah. Yeah, this was awful. I couldn't even...
And
you know, I don't watch the cables anyway because I just don't want to put it in my brain. I read it.
Yeah.
You taught me that. But I couldn't even watch it. I couldn't even go near it.
Well, it made me extraordinarily sad. And to think that the people of this persuasion, these right-wing Christian nationalists here and around the world and in other countries, these extreme right-wing Muslim nationalists and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these angry men that are going to have their way with the world and all of us are potential collateral damage.
And in the meantime, they're doing no good for anybody.
Yeah,
only
no good.
Harm.
Just
only
making
harm.
The world an absolute...
A crazier place.
You know, in some ways. I mean, who other than some other nutbag doesn't agree with this? But anyway, about, you know, it's so strange. I'm not really into kings and queens. In fact, I go right along with my English friends who say, rot all royals.
Right. Yeah. I have some English friends who say that it's an English thing. Yeah.
So they're not into any of those folks, the weddings and all of that stuff. But anyway, they had the king and queen of Norway, and they were... I mean, I can listen. I might not be able to do it. I'm beginning to feel it coming on. It'll be like the Glenn Beck of the left, except that schmuck, was, I'm a patriot. I love my country.
Yeah.
Anyway, so here they showed this church, and there's the king and queen of Norway weeping.
Ugh.
And I just started bawling. And then, I don't know, kind of as an antidote, they showed these gay marriages taking place the first time in New York State, New York City, Niagara Falls, and the kind of joy that these people had. I just started, you know, like you're supposed to cry at weddings, right? So that's all right, you know?
Well, that was the happy.
People were saying, what do they call it? You wuss-worthy. F you. That's what I say, you.
Well, Peter, there's the tragic that makes one weep, and there's the happy that makes one weep, and that's a natural human emotion. It's okay. We're not going to take your man card away.
And here, okay, that's good. I mean, I don't even know if I should read all this, but the gunman who slaughtered dozens of campers at a Norwegian island retreat used special bullets designed to disintegrate within the body and cause maximum internal damage.
Ugh.
This is according to a chief surgeon. He told the Associated Press he was treating 16 gunshot wounds. Then the victims that are recovering only tiny fragments and bullets from victims' bodies. You know, there's all this stuff about, I don't even know where you can get bullets like this or why, but there's all this Geneva Convention stuff. You can't have like flat-headed or hollow, hollow bullets because they spread. And what you know, kind of crazy to have rules of law, but they do. And they're supposed to just, you know, go right through you. The idea is to take you out, not to do this extraordinary damage. And the doctors said these bullets more or less exploded inside the body. All the energy of the bullets was deposited inside the tissue. They inflicted internal damage that's absolutely horrible. And he said the effect they cause inside the body is like 1,000 pinpricks.
Oh, my God.
So here's somebody, and you know, I looked at this guy. He looks like a model. Did you see him?
Yeah, well, kind of a creepy model.
Well, he looked Norwegian.
Well,
you're Norwegian. Like you're a beautiful blonde.
Well, thank you.
He was a handsome blonde.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, but he's creepy looking.
Yeah, well, when you know that he's cold-bloodedly killed young people, it's kind of hard to think of him as anything but creepy.
Yeah.
But, you know, he, much like the Nazis, much like other people that commit acts like this, whether it's Al-Qaeda or Timothy McVeigh, they have very rational explanations for why they're doing it.
They wrote it out.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even think of the guy's name in Arizona that shot the
gun. We're not justifying it by saying that.
No.
But they had an entire dossier or something.
Yeah.
The
Norwegian murderer, mass murderer, he has like a 1,500-page dossier that he had on the internet that they took down.
That's why I didn't see it.
But what's the guy that shot Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords?
Whatever his name was.
I mean, remember they were saying how he's influenced by the right-wing rhetoric, and that always happens. That happened considerably in Europe in the 1930s, in Spain, in Italy, in Nazi Germany, that a lot of the conservatives, of course, were too dignified and too mainstream to have any direct contact with these fascist gangs that made up the Nazi movement, the fascist parties in Spain and Italy. But the kind of rhetoric and the kind of framing that they did of the political situation, these far-right wingers acted as their shock troops. And so, I mean, they bear a direct responsibility here. And it's everywhere. I don't know. Did I send you these other things? 10 wounded as gunfire erupts outside of Seattle at a car show.
Yeah.
A shooter opened fire at a skating rink in Grand Prairie, Texas, killing 5 and wounding 4. The guy then shot himself fatally. So, you know.
We have the weekly tally. It's so sad.
I mean, we always talk about the fact that the vast, overwhelming majority of gun users, gun owners, hobbyists, hunters, and whatever, use their guns responsibly. I mean, could it be as low as like 0.5% of people that act out? Or maybe it's even 1%.
I think it is, just as it is the extremists,
sure.
The terrorists. We've always said it's under 2%.
But they have a capacity to wreak such havoc.
Yeah.
And such fear in people, and used for such horrible purposes, including like robberies and what have you. So, well, I don't know. I mean, there really is nothing much. I don't know what you can even do about this.
I don't either. Sadly,
how do you make the world less crazy?
And I think everyone is kind of in agreement these days. I see it more and more, or hear it from my friends, or see it on Facebook. I know it's just a social media, but there's a lot of social commentary going on about what's going on in the world. And everyone said, this world has really gone mad.
Well, I don't know.
I blame Bush.
Well, that's a good start. But things would be a lot better if instead of 6 billion people, we had about 60 million on the planet. We wouldn't there wouldn't be so many people rubbing so many people the wrong way.
A little overpopulated.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy men. I mean, there's a few nutball women out there, as we see in the Republican Party.
You guys know those babes.
Yeah, but it's mostly, these angry men. It's beyond angry. It's just these men filled with rage. That, I mean,
where they have to go, you know, it was a couple of weeks ago. When I wasn't on the air, so there were some things that I wasn't able to report, but I read in the Free Press about the guy who went around and was going after old girlfriends or mothers of his children and wanting to blow them all away. I mean, what's up with that?
Or who comes to the point in their life, like this guy in Grand Prairie, Texas, that, let me see it, the couple had, you know, he shot his wife, and then he shot his kids.
Yeah.
No, he didn't shoot his kids. He shot his sisters and sister-in-law.
Last week where he...
Yeah, and then shot himself. I mean, how bad could you hurt, or how bad could you feel insulted or discounted or cheated or humiliated that you would go so far as to kill other people and then kill yourself? That the social hurt, the psychological hurt you have is so extraordinary that you would go to those lengths. I mean,
I don't get it.
I mean, it probably is one in a million. But, hey, since we have, 250 or 300 million people in this country, most of them armed.
Yeah, we're going to hear more about these just naturally. Sheer numbers.
Well, we've got pretty good odds, folks, although I hate to play the odds, that we're not going to wind up to be a victim of this. So, I mean, I guess we can just look in horror and sadness and think, I don't know. I mean, I can't even imagine any way to intervene successfully. I mean, because, as I said, these mass murderers, everybody from the Nazis to McVeigh and this guy and the Al-Qaeda people, when it's not like they go, I'm just crazy and I want to kill people. They have these extraordinary rational reasons of why they're doing this. I mean, you read the Nazi stuff. I mean, they weren't just mean.
They weren't just, they didn't.
I mean, they were mean. I said they weren't just mean.
They had more than just hate, than simple hatred for Jewish people.
They were the ultimate rationalists. I mean, it was what they call, what did C. Wright Mills, a sociologist, called crackpot realism. Mm. I mean, it somehow connects to reality. And like this Norwegian was concerned that there were too many Muslims in Norway. And societies that are changing are always have problem periods without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And so how do you do it? Well, let's go kill everybody. He doesn't even go kill Muslims. Right. He goes and kills his fellow
Norwegians. Countrymen. Yeah. And what he thought he was going to get out of it other than making a worldwide statement.
Yeah. There was
nice statement.
Texas, the home of the most murderous state and the state of the highest executions. Yeah, you think there's a connection there, folks? They just executed this man who went around assassinating people he thought were Muslims after 9/11, and he killed two people. I think he missed. I think one was a Hindu, a man from India, and maybe the other was a Sikh, which is a branch of. Of Islam. Mm-hmm. And am I right, folks? If I'm wrong, I think it is. But anyway, the other guy he shot, was he Hispanic or what? But anyways, he shot this guy in the face. And then they had this, the guy that got, really messed him, the guy got wounded really badly. And the man that had been shot asked for him not to be executed. I sent you that.
And I just heard this on the way here.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Well, all right. Let's go to the real mundane. But what is going to make a financially secure life for you, your parents, wherever you are located? You might be the parents, your children. There you go. Your grandparents is being played out among these rival legislators and President Obama right now. Apparently, they failed for a budget breakthrough on Sunday and instead worked on rival plans at an impasse that heightened prospects for a catastrophic debt fall. Now, a lot of these, conservative whack jobs say, oh, it doesn't matter. Well, it will matter. I mean, the country will not. Won't go broke, or I mean, it will. Won't have any money right away. But there's a lot of ways, to work up this money. But what'll happen is that America's AAA credit rating will be downgraded, and everything will become more expensive. So
as if it's not already there.
Yeah. Well, and who will make more money then?
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, the Fat Cat Corporation.
Yeah. So let me see if there's anything more on here. The U.S. Treasury says it will run out of money to pay the country bills after August 2nd because it has to keep borrowing, as most countries do. It says Republicans, driven by the fiscally conservative Tea Party movement that helped them win the House of Representatives last November, strongly oppose tax increases, while Democrats dislike proposed cuts to popular social programs. I like that. Oh, this is very popular with me. Like grandma getting social security.
It's like a popularity contest or something in high school. This is popular. It's like a trend. It's like pop culture.
Yeah.
Like, give me a break. This is someone's livelihood.
Like,
and there are so many other places that they could make these cuts. But no, they go after grandma, and they go after the people, the little people, as who said that before? Was it Ann Coulter or something?
The very fact that Barack Obama is even discussing reduction in budget expenditures other than the military and some other stuff is so suicidal. I mean, as it is, I'll get to that a little later, but there's all these Democrats that are saying, you know, I'm not voting for this guy again.
I know. It's getting more and more all the time.
And these liberal talk show hosts, Tom Hartman and
Ed Schultz
and what's our favorite, Stephanie Miller.
Yeah.
People like that. They're saying, no, Barack Obama's done all these great things. And, you know, there's been
Ed's hammering against him.
Oh, good. Well, the others are. They're saying that he's done all these great things. He's done a few good things. But there's so many things that, as we've said, and that's where a lot of his support is beginning to fray as well, is on the left.
You know, one of the things that he's doing that's coming up very soon, in the next few days, in the next week, is the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Well, that was a success.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's actually happening currently coming up.
So. I mean, it's sort of a mixed bag with the medical plan. I mean, what he's got now, he's established a federal presence in health care, which is good.
Yes.
Which, I mean, other than Medicare.
It's a start.
Yeah. And probably that's all he could do. I think, if he was more confrontational, particularly between 2000, you know, when he began in 2009 up till 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Yeah, when the Republicans had a majority in the House. I mean, he just should have said, you know, this is it. Here is the way it's going to go.
N-O to you.
Yeah. Or Y-E-S.
Yes.
Too.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. That's what it spells. Very good.
The band, too.
Oh, yeah. There must be a band called No.
There probably is. And they're probably really cool and punk-like.
Absolutely. Peter Werman, Jalene Jordan with you. 313-298-9743. Maybe we ought to forget the letters.
I don't know. That's kind of a
tradition.
Standard tradition.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you, too. If you'd like to email us, calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
And you know what? If anyone just heard that, the reason we say that is because phones no longer have the three letters per, per number. So...
And you know,
like I always say, Riff listeners know the number.
Right. This is not a show that is, I probably have said this any number of times, this is not a show that is striving for ratings, even though it gets it. The podcast we put out that will be available Monday, tomorrow at 12 o'clock. And thank you, Athena and Sarah, for doing that, and Jeremy. And but rather, this is supposed to cover WRIF's public service commitment that this station, this network, this company makes to the Federal Communications Commission in pursuance of its license. It could be. This is luck of the draw. It could have had some crazed right-wingers on it, some crazed left-wingers.
Be happy it's us.
Yeah.
George from Taylor wrote in, long-time listener. Hi, George. He said, FICA, the Federal Insurance Contribution Act, is an insurance program. He said he's 68 years old. He's paid into this insurance program since he was 16 for 52 years. Now the Republicans and President Bush, he said, oops, President Obama wants to cut my benefits along with Medicare and Medicaid. This is an extraordinary tax burden upon me and the other old, poor, and the sick. Social Security has nothing to do with the budget deficit, and it is $3 trillion, yes, over $3 trillion. What a great transfer from the poor to the rich.
Yeah, well, no, that's true, is that Social Security is not, in fact, the Social Security Trust Fund is a creditor. In other words, the United States government owes the Social Security Trust Fund, did he say $3 trillion? Is that what it was? I thought it was a little less, but, you know, it's a lot of money. So there's nothing wrong with Social Security. It doesn't have to be reformed. I would have to say, I don't think that President Barack Obama wants to cut Social Security, but the fact that he's willing even to consider it is enough for anybody with any sense to, I don't know, what can we do? I mean, what are we going to do when they have, it's going to be Herman Cain for, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. In fact, someone I know, I was on the phone with them, and they were saying, yeah, they're liking Herman Cain. And I thought, am I still talking to you? We got an email from Brian in Minneapolis. Didn't we hear the place which sold the fertilizer to the Norway bomber had alerted police? So why wasn't someone like the Norwegian FBI immediately watching him? Good question.
Here, by the way, is a from Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Oh, I mean, I kind of got diverted, as I often do. So I'm saying that the importance of this program is to, you know, on a popular station, unlike popular social programs, a popular station, that you actually get to hear in fairly simple terms what we can expect out of our economic and social life. And when I say social, I don't mean dating. You know, I mean,
talking about going to a show.
What's the quality of our lives going to be? Depending, you know, there's people that are listening that are 14, and I know that there's people that are listening, I happen to know there's people listening that are 90. Mm-hmm. And everyone is affected negatively by what the Republicans want and what Barack Obama may agree to.
Yes.
In fact, you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Am I here? Yes. And there's something by an old pal, Jeff Cohen, who formed Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting in, fair.org.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that go? Oh, yeah, it says, he writes, Obama is not caving to corporate interests. He advocated them all along. I mean, Barack Obama is a corporatist as well.
Sure.
I mean, you can have liberal corporatists and centrist corporatists like Obama is, and you can have right-wing and far-right-wing corporatists like the teabaggers. I mean, but ultimately, they support the interests of the corporation as opposed to the interests of the people.
He seems more to the right than Bill Clinton, except for that little trade thing.
Just that little thing like NAFTA.
Just that little thing.
And that little thing like the Communications Act.
That too. Uh-huh.
Anyway, Dean Baker, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, which I say usually people like this is a heads up.
CEPR.org. It's not that boring.
Well, it could be boring. It could be, but there's a lot of, you're entertained all the time. You know, you have, iPods and television and what have you.
Yeah.
This is about, say, okay, I'm 18 years old and I'm going to be working. Well, they might have you working for the next 60 or 65 years as they want to raise the age of retirement.
Yeah.
As opposed to other countries are trying to lower it. As you get into your 60s, why do you have to wait to 65? You want, some time in your twilight years to enjoy life. Anyway. Here's what, after saying that this is going, that this gang of six, they got these six senators trying to figure out something. The proposed cuts to Social Security are cumulative, and without reading all the details, this means an increasing loss to people that are depending upon that as their income as
their
the years go on.
Income.
Yeah. The plan also calls for large cuts in tax rates, including a targeted top rate of between 23% and 29%, which will be at least partially offset by elimination of tax deductions. But they're talking, here he says, for example, Jamie Dimon and Lloyd Blankfein, the CEOs of J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs, these are the bankers that caused all this, the banksters, let me get that right, the banksters that caused the problems that we're in. And, of course, rather than them being punished in any way, they've been richly rewarded. They're both paid close to $20 million a year. So they make $200 million every decade. I mean, that's probably more than, your whole, 10-20 square blocks that we live on, making tenure.
Or more.
Yeah, right. If this pay is taxed as ordinary income, then they would be paying close to $7.5 million a year in taxes. Oh, poor babies. They only wind up at $12.5
million.
However, if the top rate is set at 29%, they will save as much as almost $2 million a year on their tax bill. If the top rate is set at 23%, then the Gang of Six plan may increase their after-tax income by more than $3 million a year. So this is a way of getting more millionaires more money. Now, those Republicans say, these are the job creators. Well, this is his personal income.
This is another one of those new catchphrases that are trying to snow people.
Why wouldn't you tax these guys in a time of great economic problems? Why wouldn't you tax like $18 million out of his $20 million? So he's left with $2 million. In the meantime, I mean, that's kind of rich, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's kind of rich.
I think it is.
Well, here's what my guest, I forgot who I'm playing first, but he'll be on either at 1 or 1:30 tonight. This is David Swanson, and his group is called RootsAction.org. RootsAction.org. It's sort of like MoveOn. MoveOn.org, except they're not tied.
I haven't heard them for a
Except they're not tied into the Democratic Party. The wealthiest nation on earth is not actually obliged to starve our senior citizens. We don't need a military 670 times more expensive than the next largest one on earth. We don't need to fund health insurance corporations instead of health care. And we don't need tax breaks for billionaires. In fact, we don't need billionaires. That's the message Roots Action is taking to Congress. Hey, if you want to comment on any of this, if you think, wait, but these guys are crazy, that's their money, or we've got to have
they give us the jobs.
Yeah, right. Except they're not. Where are they? Where are the jobs they're given?
Peter, what would we do without the billionaires and like the sheik near Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
And he has had a his name.
You ready for it?
What?
His name. Go ahead.
Hamad.
Yeah, but he's got a long name. What is it all?
Oh, you want me to get to try it? Here we go. Ready? Sheikh Hamad bin Hamdan Al Nahyan. Okay. So he had his own name carved into the desert.
Right.
All right.
Big letters.
And so big. So not just big. So big you can see it from space. And this is what this guy.
Wait. So big that the H and the A are actually water channels.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that part. Okay, well, he boasts a $14 billion fortune, and the name is 2 miles across, letters a kilometer high. Oh, yeah, there it is. The H and the A and the M have been made into waterways. He has a fleet of more than 200 cars, including 7 Mercedes 500 SELs painted in different colors of the rainbow. And
does he know that's a gay symbol?
He probably wouldn't be happy, would he? Is housed in a custom-built pyramid. Ah, yeah. Yes.
So, in the meantime, people are starving in Somalia again.
Yeah. Life is good for Oman.
Yeah. Right.
Gee, come on.
But let's see. So balance the budget on the backs of the billionaires, says David Swanson. And let's see. Forbes magazine has been listing the 400 wealthiest Americans every year since 1982. 13 billionaires appeared on the original Forbes list. Now all 400 rate billionaire status. These 400 collectively possess more wealth than the poorer half of America's population put together. The United States now has an inequality that shocks much of the world. If Washington wants to balance its budget, it should do so on the backs of these 400 people, not the hundreds of millions of us who can't afford it, says David Swanson. Tax these billionaires into non-billionaires, and Washington's financial worries and our economic worries will be gone for generations to come. And according to the polls, the vast majority of us support this. Only 1% of us are millionaires, so 99% are not. That's with an M. Each billionaire has 1,000 times that much money or more.
Unreal.
66% of senators are millionaires, as are 41% of House members, but they aren't billionaires. They just work for them.
Yeah, right, exactly. Meanwhile, the rest of us chumps, I mean, and a lot of people, you know, trying to make food last for the month or pay for medicine or even be able to go to a doctor. And, you know, it's not even paycheck to paycheck anymore for Peter.
Damn.
For Peter. Anymore, Peter, for many people, you know. And that just disgusts me.
Here's the last thing that we'll read from David Swanson. You can hear him tonight on the show after 1 o'clock. Last year, a list was leaked of attendees of an important right-wing planning conference organized by Koch Industries. These are the Koch brothers, these billionaires. They're in the top 10, both of them are in the top 10 list of richest Americans. This is an annual meeting at which the servants of plutocracy, the rule of the rich, plot its further enrichment. 11 members of this year's Forbes 400 were on the list. They are the hardcore plutocrats. They are the people who personally take the time to destroy our political system for their own short-term gain and that of their families if their aristocracy of wealth is allowed to continue. These 11 people pay a fraction of the rate you pay on your income into Social Security and Medicare. They have no need for Social Security or Medicare.
Yeah.
And they participate in a political movement that is trying to dismantle those programs. And then he ends with, meet your masters, fellow Americans. And then he lists these 11 guys, all billionaires, a lot of them, you know, got it. Either they produce nothing, like Ken Griffin, known as a bank. She doesn't produce anything other than money. A lot of them inherited it, so it's not like they worked hard for it or anything. So, you know, Jalene and I say, eat the rich. Probably too radical for most of you, but at least shouldn't we tax the rich? They created the mess. Let's get them to pay for it. And, hey, maybe we won't have this. We won't have be struggling over crumbs. All right, we're going to take a break. We're a little late. We're going to talk about a Republican with a big headache and also gay marriage. And, hey, don't
Can't
go away.
Wait.
Wait, where? Let me see. Where is my little thing here? I want to tell people. Okay. Yeah. Paul and Austin and Russell and Scott and Stan, stay on because a lot of you want to talk about things other than what I just mentioned.
Which is fine.
We're going to get to you first and then we'll talk about headaches and gay marriage and what have you.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Need new tires? Take the Bell Tire Price Challenge. We challenge you to find a lower tire price anywhere because we shop the competition every day to make sure our tire prices are the lowest. I'm Steve Richardson, a Bell Tire store manager. We challenge you to challenge us online, challenge us over the phone, or even challenge us right in the store. Come in and we'll check other stores' prices with you right at the counter and prove to you that Bell Tire has the lowest tire prices, period. For a limited time only, get Michelin Harmony Touring All-Season Passenger Tires for only $89 each. And Goodyear Integrity Touring All-Season Passenger Tires are a great value at just $98 each. Go to BellTire.com for all the details. Prove it to yourself. If you need new tires, take the Bell Tire Price Challenge today. We're confident you'll find that we have the lowest tire prices in town. Nobody beats Bell Tire.
Bell Tire, with over 80 locations, they're in your neighborhood. For the Bell Tire near you, call 888-GO-BELL or log on to BellTire.com. Hurry to Bell Tire today.
We met through an online dating service. A perfect match.
We had everything in common.
Even our car insurance.
We both have e-surance because we both love discounts.
We had a little scare, though, because I got all my e-surance discounts over the phone.
And I got all mine on their website.
But we realized it didn't matter how we got our discounts.
As long as we both had them.
To get your perfect car insurance discounts, get a quote today at esurance.com or 1-800-ESURANCE. E-surance, technology when you want it, people when you don't.
Not available in all states. Some restrictions apply. Discounts may vary by state. See site for details.
I love your eyes.
My mum always says, hard work never hurt anybody. Good advice as usual. So we worked very hard to make Geico.com very easy. Say you want to report a claim and follow its progress. You can do it all online at Geico.com. Not to mention perhaps saving a tidy sum of money on your car insurance. All it takes is a few clicks. So visit Geico.com today. Oh, and mum, if you're listening, yes, I did wash behind my ears this morning.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. I'd like to hear from you at those phone numbers. And, hey, we are talking about this slaughter by a right-wing Christian nationalist terrorist and kind of put forth, what in the world can we do?
And this was in Norway.
In Norway, yeah. It hasn't happened here. Yeah, well, it hasn't happened.
We need to specify, right?
Yeah, it hasn't happened since Tim McVeigh. And also, you're just your everyday slaughters. I mean, how weird to say. I don't think we can do anything except maybe somehow try to make this country less crazy in general. We got all these crazy people running for the presidency, too.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you know, I would never mention people like Sarah Palin. All of a sudden, you go, come.
We sure haven't talked about her for a
long
time.
Well, we decided, you know, that the P.T. Barnum the slogan, any publicity is good publicity as long as you spell the name right.
Yeah, and she eats up every second of it.
And they're out of here. I mean, she's toast. She's
off the radar.
She's off the radar.
I mean, but she's a cockroach. She'll be back.
I like that. She just, there was this documentary made of her, this feature-length documentary called The Undefeated. And I'm thinking,
God, who would waste their time?
Well, I was thinking, though, what about 2008?
Yeah, defeated!
Hello! But it's increasing its play dates, and this is very typical of right-wing fanatics. It's increasing its play dates by 40% this weekend, only to watch box office revenue decline by more than 63%. They're playing in the 14 Tea Party-friendly locations this weekend, up from the 10 in which it opened last week. Are you ready for what it grossed? You ever see these grosses like, you know, Harry Potter?
For Harry Potter, yeah.
$238 million.
Yeah, uh-huh.
This grossed $24,000.
Oh, makes me happy.
Yeah. And this whack job, Michelle Bachmann, she suffers from migraine headaches. And I know a lot of people that do.
And for those, you know, some people aren't political. So that this is this crazy woman from Minnesota.
Okay. Yeah. Who says the darndest things.
Yeah. And she's running. And she's like you would. You said the thinking person, Sarah Palin. Isn't that like
I forgot which way it goes. No, Sarah Palin is the thinking man's Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, because Michelle Bachmann.
Michelle Bachmann is totally crazy.
She's totally crazy.
And she says wrong stuff all the time, like she said. And the founding fathers worked tirelessly to end slavery. And everybody's going, wait a minute, Michelle. They enthroned it in the Constitution. I mean, the reason that the Southern states wanted to separate from England is they were afraid because of these court decisions that were coming down in England that slavery would be abolished mm-hmm. in England and then hence in all the colonies as well.
Yeah.
So they hooked on to the objection of the, you know, the big growers and merchants of the North,
mm-hmm.
George Washington pals. And but then they demanded that slavery and slavery is mentioned. I forgot how many times in the Constitution. I mean, here you had these people like Thomas Jefferson that just thought this was an abomination. But he wrote it all in there. You know, fugitive slave acts and continuing the importation of slaves
right.
and letting these slave states have this disproportionate political preponderance up until the Civil War because they were able to count their human chattel as 3/5 of a human
yes.
being.
Yeah. Ah. Oh, it's just
so here you
revolting.
Got
disgusting.
Dumb old Michelle Bachmann saying that the founding fathers worked tirelessly to end slavery. Well, she was on the George Stephanopoulos's show on ABC and asked her to defend the fact that the U.S. founders helped enshrine slavery in the Constitution and allowed it to continue as an institution until the Civil War. And Bachman responded by pointing to the career of John Quincy Adams, the abolitionist president.
Ugh.
But he was 9 years old when the Declaration of Independence
she's so
was
stupid.
Yeah. She, and she says, He was a very young boy, but he was with his father, serving essentially as his father's secretary. He tirelessly worked throughout his life to make sure that we did, in fact, one day eradicate slavery from our nation. Oh. And I'm so grateful for that work. Why is she grateful?
Clap it, woman. And you know what? No, actually, I want her to do quite the opposite. I want her to keep spewing these idiotic remarks and just like Palin did, brought herself down.
So Stephanopoulos says he wasn't one of the founding fathers. He was a president. He was a secretary of state as a member of Congress. You're right. He did work to end slavery decades later. But so you're standing by this comment that the founding fathers worked tirelessly to end slavery?
Yeah.
Well, John Quincy Adams most certainly was part of the Revolutionary War era. He was a very young boy.
Oh, God.
But he was actively involved.
I'll give her a John Quincy Adams.
Okay. So she's getting these terrible headaches, severe to moderate headaches.
Migraines.
Migraines, nausea.
Mm-hmm. Someone accused her of being a pill head. Is that what?
Oh, yeah. She takes a lot of drugs. As a lot of migraine sufferers do. And I'm not making fun of her for that.
Those things are no joke. I've had two in my life, and they are no joke.
I know people have chronic ones.
Yeah, that's terrible. It's awful.
She's increasingly finding herself under scrutiny. In the past week alone, she was confronted with questions about her husband's Christian counseling center, her decision to switch churches, and now her medical history.
Well, no, her husband wants to...
cure gays.
Slap the gay right out of you, Right. It's just a hoot. I think she gets these migraines because she's so dumb and mean.
That could be. Brian Ross of ABC News was roughed up by Bachman aides in South Carolina on Tuesday when he dashed after her with a camera trying to ask if she had missed House votes as a result of the headaches. But wait a minute. Here is the real factor. Migraines can be triggered by a variety of factors. Mrs. Bachman has her own theory about her condition.
Yeah, what is that?
The Daily Caller reported that, quote, she has implausibly blamed the headaches on uncomfortable high-heeled shoes she wears.
Well, that's going to win her some votes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Get yourself some sensible flats, Michelle.
Her son, who's a physician, said his mother did, in fact, notice, quote, a correlation between the headaches and days when she's wearing heels. The truth is she wears high heels all the time and she doesn't get migraines all the time, he said, adding. But she's found a correlation, though. A correlation does not necessarily equal causation. It's an unknown cause.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I can't even believe that my brain got wasted, that the space was taken up by this most ridiculous
woman.
Person.
Yeah. All right. We got to get some. People have been waiting and waiting.
Oh, my God. Let the people speak.
313-298-WRIF. Stan from Garden City. Thanks for being our first caller after all this time and waiting so patiently. You're on the air.
Oh, good evening. Okay. You passed the biscuits my way. Thank you very much.
All right.
Enjoy.
Well, I guess with the financial issue and debt ceiling and what we see global, when the money stops going to the streets, the blood starts flowing in the streets. Personally, myself, I've been unemployed 3 years. If it wasn't for my wife, I don't know where I'd be.
Oh.
Job after job, application after application, resume after resume in Michigan, nothing. I'm stuck on welfare as a choice because I had no other choice or I'd be in a box right now.
Wait, Stan, you can't be on welfare.
Yeah.
What kind of welfare?
Well, here in Michigan.
What is it? What's it called?
What do you mean?
Well, you got your bridge card, your food card, your Medicaid card, courtesy of the taxpayer.
Okay.
I don't want to be on welfare.
No, nobody does.
No, Peter, I don't want to be on welfare. Yeah. I want to work. I'm an able-bodied man, and this is a shame. Unemployment 9.2. The whole Obama administration, I voted for the guy, but this ain't the change I voted for. He don't want to pay veterans. This financial tower of Babylon keeps collapsing globally. It's just a matter of time. And you wonder why people are going crazy around the whole world. Greece, Italy, Portugal, Spain.
Yeah.
Our leaders are failures.
Well, they are. And I don't think that, I agree with you. I don't think President Obama has created the kind of leadership because they are still too tied into the corporate sector that created all this problem in the first place. And, I mean, it took somebody it's not like the Democratic Party was once the party of the people and suddenly it's become the party of the corporations. Both the parties have always been the parties of the elite. Well, the Democrats, well, different different periods, but in the modern era, the Democratic Party has been closer to defending the interests of the middle class and the working class, although they've never done enough, and they've either collapsed in front of Republican demands like they're doing now, or they just didn't provide the leadership or enough fighting spirit. And let me ask you this, Stan. I've got all these friends that some of them even work for Barack Obama. Are you going to vote for him again?
Never.
Okay. Would you?
I'll tell you the reason why.
Well, wait. But let me ask you a question.
Would you vote for Michelle Bachmann?
What if it's some?
Never.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
This is the problem. The entire thing's been demoralized on both sides of the trough of the party, whatever side of the fence you're on. The problem I have with President Obama is specific. Don't go into much detail, but when you got troops on the front line, okay, and veterans that served in these wars for the better interest of the elite, okay, to make the country a better place, obviously it's not, but
yeah. You
don't want to pay anything out. I mean, the veterans, the Social Security, disability checks, I mean, what do I have to do? Do I have to break my leg or neck to get Social Security since I can't find work? I mean, good God, I worked since I was 14 years old, and here I am almost 36, 3 years unemployed. What am I to do?
Well, you know what? I have no idea. I mean, I was going to ask you how old you are, because I heard, I think it was even some Republican commentator, says people that are 55 right now and not working may never work again. I mean, they're reconstructing this society, so we're not going to have the kind of structure that we expected, that our parents expected for us. And part of the problem is that we're depending on, like, Barack Obama, or we're depending on the Democrats or whatever, and time and time again, they've shown they're not adequate to the challenge, and we haven't had the capacity to create a movement of people that will confront this. I know one of the things that this rootsaction.org is trying to do. They're trying to draft the senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, who's an independent. He's not a Republican and he's not a Democrat.
He's good.
But he's a senator. I don't know if you know this guy or not, but I mean, all you do is Google Bernie Sanders and get some of his speeches and you'll go, this guy gets it 100%.
Yeah.
Stan, best of luck on all this. It must be terrible. I mean, all right, but best of luck is best I can say. I mean,
we talk to every week. At least a few people who are in this type of situation. It's pretty depressing.
It is.
So sorry.
It is. Here's Russell in Northville. Russell, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Love your guys' show and love what you guys are trying to do, put all this stuff out there for people to understand.
Well, thanks
Russell.
Yeah. First of all, I totally agree. Until people, I guess, get together and decide that obviously a two-party system isn't going to work. I mean, like you said, get an independent in there, somebody that's actually worked for a living and hasn't been, spoon-fed with a golden spoon or whatever. And, like Ron Paul or somebody's got everybody might think it's an extreme idea about things, but that's what it's going to take to, change everything. Plus,
You know what, Russell, I think and I'm not faulting you for this, being critical, but you're still thinking solely in terms of politics. All during the 1920s, which was supposed to be the grand age before the big collapse in 1929, wages were pretty low. There was virtually no unions. There was no kind of movement demanding reform or change or anything like that. When finally the stuff hit the fan and working people began to organize in the early 1930s, and there was what they called general strikes. That is like the whole, every working person in a particular city stopped. And there was a general strike in Toledo. There was a general strike in Minneapolis. There was a general strike in San Francisco. And people were talking about a revolution. They were saying this capitalist system does not work for us. I mean, at the same time, all the rich guys were having these big parties and driving big cars and stuff, just like now. And all of a sudden, Roosevelt, who's from the elite class, he comes in and he said, whoa, wait a minute, we got to have Social Security. We got to have a weekend. We've got to let unions, organize. We've got to have a minimum wage. We've got to have, all of this. We've got to take a multi-billion-dollar jobs program and have the government hire people and put everybody back to work. And what it did was, I mean, to a large extent, it defused the potential of the kind of revolutionary movements that were going on in Europe. But the point being is that the elite and the rulers will respond, but they're not going to respond to, I don't think, to us, you know, backing probably not even Bernie Sanders or Ron Paul or anybody like that.
Right.
Yeah. So go ahead.
Can I make a comment about all these people going crazy anymore? The guy kind of hit it on the head, you know. People are just getting drafted to where they'll do just about anything, you know, desperation to, I mean, that's not justifying these guys, you know, killing people, whatever, and going crazy. But, you know, there's no repercussion in someone's eyes. And the way I see it, you know, that, you know, if I kill someone, I'm going, well, you know, if I get so mad I decide to kill someone, I can just sit in prison the rest of my life, you know. I mean, do you think if there's a death penalty or some kind of repercussion of what you do, it would change people?
No, nope.
No, they've shown that over and over. Like I said, the states with the highest, and they don't, you know, execute that many people anymore.
It's been proven, yeah.
Texas, Georgia, Virginia execute the most people. They also have the highest crime murder rate.
Yeah, and the crime does not go down. It's been shown through studies that
and
yes.
And Michigan, to its credit, has never had a death penalty since it became a state in 1837. And in terms of murders, kind of right in the middle, you know, of all the 50 states. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We can get this one in, I think. Here's Austin in Clarkston. Austin, hey, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You are on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
We are doing a talk show.
Hey, well, I got two things. One kind of goes along with the Obama thing, not the last caller, but the guy before him. And then the other one's kind of off topic, but I just kind of want you guys' opinion on it. Is that cool?
Sure, yeah. Sure. Go ahead.
All right, the kind of one that's kind of off topic, what would you guys think if Ted Nugent ran for president?
Oh, God,
he's terrible.
Please, no.
Horrible.
No, he needs to stick. He just needs to get a guitar and go on tour and stick to rock and roll.
Here's the first thing that old Tedley should do is take an anger management course.
Yeah.
If he took like about a year and a half anger management course.
Do you think that would be enough?
Yeah. That he then say, okay, Ted, let's see how you talk to people and whether you're still threatening people and stuff.
You know what? Ted's the kind of guy who really does need music, because for a lot of musicians, that's kind of like their drug, kind of like their antidepressant. He needs to play more guitar, and, you know, he can do whatever he wants with his guns. I'm over it.
Well, Austin, I bet that surprised you.
But no president, no.
Yeah. And the second one, my buddy was telling me today that he heard on the news or somewhere that President Obama wanted to make it, so I don't know when this is going to happen, if it's true or not.
Wait a minute. I'll tell you right now. It's not true.
It's not true. He heard it from somewhere or somebody, and I, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. But go ahead. Tell me what it is.
I don't believe it, and I hope it's not true either, but he said that you're not, as of in a little bit, you're not going to be able to claim your kids on your taxes anymore.
No.
They're going to bump you up on tax bracket. What do you guys think about that?
No.
That's nonsense.
That's complete nonsense.
You know, there's a website.
Don't listen to that, friend.
You know, I'll tell you, I just got two emails from a friend of mine. I was so angry at him.
Really?
Well, he sent these stupid, one was this I don't even think he realized, an anti-Muslim thing.
Really?
And another one was an anti-Detroit thing.
A friend of yours?
Well, you know, it was one of these things that said, here's what happened. So there's this website, Austin, called Snopes, SNOPES.com. And you can go to it and you can put Obama, no tax deduction for children. And boom, there it is. You know, you go
say
on,
it's
and,
not
and
it, so.
And it'll tell you the origins of it. If you got an email on it, for instance, it usually repeats the email verbatim. And so both of these things were totally false that this guy sent out. And I just, and what people do all the time, you can see they'll have like 75 people in the CC box, you know, the copy. And what you should do, what it's called netiquette, what you want to do is you want to send it to yourself and put all the other recipients in the BCC. Because putting everybody's name out there like that is what guarantees that you get spam.
Spam.
But it also, when they, and I would say, I get things like this from.
I think this is a personal thing here. You feel
well, when things like this, I mean, my dad's wife used to say, I mean, things that were, she didn't send racist stuff or anything like that.
No.
But she just sent things that were so off the wall that I can spot these things like in a second. But before, when someone says, you know, like, a town in Minnesota is going to declare Sharia law and Christians aren't going to be allowed to have churches, and it says, and one of the things, well, it says this has been checked with Snopes as accurate. If it says that in the email, that's almost a guarantee that
you need to go to Snopes.
All right. Yeah, Austin, thank you very much.
Austin, whenever you talk to this friend, just go to Snopes.
All right, thanks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
When it's raining hard outside, can your roof still keep out the leaks inside? If it's time for a new roof, get your roofing installed the right way with Sears. Call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. You can save $500 if you call right now. Sears licensed fully insured contractors can get your roofing job done right. Sears has a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance, and you'll save $500 if you call now. So, for roofing done right, call Sears for a free in-home consultation at 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. That's Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Do you have stretch marks due to pregnancy or rapid weight gain but can't find a product that works? Stay tuned, because the next 60 seconds will change everything. Celtrixa is a scientific breakthrough that dramatically reduces the appearance of stretch marks anywhere on the body. And for a limited time, we're looking for 100 women in this listening area to try it risk-free. Just call 1-800-519-9436. The first 100 callers are guaranteed a risk-free trial. Lines are open. Call now. The proven ingredients in Celtrixa help visibly reduce even the darkest stretch marks. The results are so impressive, women who've tried it say it's life-changing. And now it's being offered risk-free to this station's first 100 callers. Celtrixa is not available in stores, so call immediately to see if you're one of the first 100 callers and try it before you buy it. To find out how you can try Celtrixa free for 30 days, call 1-800-519-9436. If lines are busy, please try again. 1-800-519-9436.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services Term Life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-928-6929 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-928-6929. 1-800-928-6929. Or go to selectquote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Yes. Thank God it's freaking Friday. This Friday, starting at 11 a.m. with Ann Carlini. It's a badass Friday. Kid Rock tickets every hour until midnight for his first show, August 12th at Comerica Park. The Risk Badass Friday from 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Just got an email from Sigrid at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And there, people are suggesting other ways to approach this budget. That right now is, are we going to, you know, die a death of a thousand cuts or just get one smack? I don't know. But she writes that starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday at Central United Methodist Church, that's right down near the ballparks, there's this whole all-day event, and they call the People's Budget, and Congressman John Conyers will be there as well. Wait a minute. Explain why John Conyers. He's going to be at the First United Methodist Church in Farmington. Anyways, too much going on. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Go down the left side, and there's a skyline of Detroit. There's where these events are. If you're having events, want to send them to me, please do. All right, so the banksters got us in this mess. When there was something called the savings and loan scandal, when there was these banksters.
Neil Bush.
Neil Bush and, yeah, the brother of George and all that. And there was something like 1,000 prosecutions, and there's been relatively few this time. Now, this gives you an idea of what's going on. There were more than 450,000 borrowers who were charged excessive fees by Countrywide Home Loans when they fell behind in their mortgages. And so Countrywide is going to have to pay them $108 million. The company agreed to pay this in a settlement with the Federal Trade Commission. Most will get $500 or less, but 0.16. Why do they even mention this? Not even 1% will receive $5,000 or more. John Leibowitz, chairman of the Trade Commission, said in an interview, it is astonishing that one single company could be responsible for overcharging more than 450,000 homeowners. And it goes on, talks about the way they charge the excessive and fees and improper charges levied on borrowers whose loans were serviced by Countrywide. Aren't there laws against this? This is not something a little fine from the Federal Trade Commission, but rather this is criminal fraud. Why aren't these people being prosecuted? That's what I don't understand.
I don't get it.
Many seek to revamp the post office. They're talking about three-day service and immediately cutting off on Saturday. And here they got a Senate bill that would probably grant the Postal Service much of what it wants, including the ability to tap into surpluses in its retiree benefit funds. It would also eliminate Saturday services, close more unprofitable post office. And
I think that Saturday service thing's going to happen.
Yeah, despite cutting $12 billion in costs over the last 4 years and eliminating more than 200,000 career positions.
Oh, no.
Stan called in earlier about the, you know, not being able to find
work.
A job.
The post office
is expected to lose $8 billion for its second consecutive year. Well, I always make the point, how much money did your local police department, quote, lose? How about your school system? How much did it lose? I don't get it. How much did Medicare lose? That is a more complicated thing. But in other words, we have services that the government coordinates. Socialized, this is socialism, folks. It's socialized government activity. The cost is socialized. We can't deliver the mail ourselves. Maybe we could hire our own cops and our own fire. Yeah, guy comes out. Oh, wait a minute. Your house is on fire? You didn't pay.
Sorry.
You're not in on it. So what we have, through taxes, we have this process socialized. Well, so is the post office. Why should it make a profit? I don't get this. In fact, what should happen for personal letters, for personal communications, it ought to drop. I mean, even 44 cents seems like a lot. Walmart is giving $50,000 in a grant to the city of Detroit.
They are.
What, yeah.
What are
the
they
Walmart
trying
found,
to achieve?
Well,
what are they trying to get?
It's called City Year Detroit. They're giving it to City Year AmeriCorps. Well, they're trying to show that they're good corporate citizens.
Yeah,
so
that
when they want to put in their big box stores everywhere and drive little local merchants out of work and put in, people working at a wage that creates a poverty class, built-in wage structure that has hundreds of thousands of people working in, near poverty wages. That's what it's all about. And they, 50,000 on, Alice Walton, you know, never worked for her money, is one of the 10 richest people in the United States in Bennington, Arkansas, where old Sam Walton started his business. Well, you weren't here for that. She's creating this multi-million-dollar
the museum.
Art museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the last couple of weeks been busy and met someone who, through talking, getting to know each other a few days, said, "You're not one of those people who doesn't shop at Walmart, are you?" I go, "Absolutely." I thought, please, we better stop here if we want to continue liking each other.
You don't have to be a member, do you, to shop at Walmart?
No.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, Costco. Well, you do have to be a member to be at Costco.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're not great, but Costco's pretty good on their politics.
Yeah. They welcome unionization. The CEO, I think, makes $600,000 a year.
Rather than
20, well, and is not a billionaire like the Walton.
Exactly. Yeah.
And tries to give his good. He's actually, when he tries to give better benefits to the workers, all of his stock analysts say he can't do that. It creates a I forget what they call it. I mean, in other words, the company's spending too much money and its stock will go down. I mean, even so, the guy even tries to do better. Whereas with Walmart, they try to do the opposite. All right, let's go back to our phones, 313-298-WRIF. Here's Paul in Sterling Heights. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hiya, folks.
Hi.
Hi.
I need to know, are the billionaires okay tonight?
Oh, the babies. The
are they?
Babies.
Please tell me that.
I don't know.
I got 2 points. Real quick. I wish you wouldn't parrot the same talking point like, could I convince you that consumer demand creates jobs?
Yeah.
To do with
right.
Money.
Wait a minute. Could you convince me? That's called, rather than supply side economics, it's called demand economics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't tax cuts got nothing to do with it.
Right.
Consumer demand creates jobs. And one other thing.
Well, wait. Well, wait a minute, Paul. There is an element of tax cuts that will, and there should be enormous tax cuts in this country. There should be a tremendous tax rise on billionaires, on wealth that's not being used, like all these, these billionaires on the Forbes 400. But there should be a tax cut on people making $50,000 and below. I mean, in fact, not people go, wait a minute, man, I make 65. I don't get anything. No, there should be like always said, $50,000 tax deduction. So you start paying tax on when you make $51,000. And that's called, and what people would do, that would create demand side, demand.
What you're speaking of.
Demand, right. Demand side. I can't say it, but you know what I mean, I hope.
Okay. One last point.
Well, wait a minute. Do you agree with me that if you did tax cuts for the middle class and for the working class, that they would affect.
What I asked first, dude.
What?
Are the billionaires okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. One last point, if I may.
Yeah.
PRWatchdog.org.
Good one.
Is a great site about ALEC. If you know what ALEC, that acronym is, ALEC.
I can't remember off the top of my head, but if you don't know what it is, you don't know what kind of forces are working against your interests, right?
Right. PRWatchdog.org.
Yeah.
Good night.
All right. Good night. Thank
good
you very
night,
much.
Paul.
And I was trying to think whether I had the ALEC thing on my. Oh, yeah. I thought I did. Wait a minute. On my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Oh, yeah, here. And it says, big sign, eat the rich. It says, U.S. debt problem, make the rich pay for it. They created and are still getting richer from it. But then there's also, right below it, it says, ALEC, A-L-E-C, conferees for the rich might want to watch their backs at New Orleans meeting. So what's happening is all these folks, these right-wingers, these politicians that do the bidding of the billionaires, like the Tea Party folks and all that, the Republicans in general. And it's called the American Legislative Exchange Council. And it says, you may not have heard of this. It's from The Hayride. And the website must be what? TheHayride.com. It's an organization made up of state lawmakers of a center-right, far-right ideological orientation, and it promotes model legislation to generate conservative reforms. See, these billionaires are able to pay for all these politicians on the right, and yeah, okay, they pay for the centrist ones as well, but they really, they have such an impact, and they are so well organized, and they are so well funded, and liberals and Democrats, I mean, you know, they're, this stuff gets around the world before liberals get their pants on. I mean, it's that bad. So let's go back to our phones. Here is, that guy dropped off. I was just about to get him. Here is Tom in St. Clair Shores. Tom, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I have been listening to you since 1978.
God, we were both 12.
I know. I'm a little more dated, and so are you. So,
okay.
Anyway, I've just really got some questions for you. I've been informed, and I'm keeping myself informed with the Free State Project. And gosh, you stopped. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. Anyway, and I have so many, you know. You believe that the government is corrupt, and I mean, I've heard you over and over today. I've been listening to you since the beginning of the program, and there's been so many topics that I wanted to touch. I've literally got a whole spread of probably 7 sheets of paper out here with things that I've wanted to speak to you about, but I only have so much time.
Well, yeah. you can also email Peter questions, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he will answer you.
Well, that's okay. For the moment, you spoke of, you know, do you believe that the government is efficient in any way?
Efficient? No.
Okay, so anything the government has ever done, you do not believe is very efficient?
Ever?
Well, you know what? It's partly scale. I mean, if you have, like, Jalene and I live in a suburb that, you know, we're not married. We live in separate homes with different partners. And but we live in a suburb that has about 28,000 people. And is there waste there? I mean, do everybody work with their nose to the grindstone? No. But, I mean, it's convivial enough that there's probably less corruption, less waste. Although small towns, they can do their number, too. I mean, the larger the scale, the more they're both of the institution and the bureaucracy, like the most inefficient bureaucracy there is on the face of the planet is the United States Armed Services, right?
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. Okay, so we're in agreement that the government is generally pretty inefficient.
Yeah.
But you were spouting that someone that makes $20 million, we should steal $18 million from him and give that money to the inefficient people to divvy it up.
Well, here's what I'm saying. These are the guys that created the problem. We're talking, I mean, come on. These are the banksters. I don't have that in front of me. It was Goldman Sachs and another one of these people that screwed up the world economy. I mean, they ought to be in jail. They shouldn't just have $18 million taken from their salary. They ought to be out, writing their family from some minimum security prison.
Well, how did they actually get that power? It was through government.
Well, no, I don't know. Wait a minute. Yes and no. I mean, this is really complicated because you got to remember these people advocate. They talk both sides of their mouth. On one hand, they want the so-called free market when they don't want any regulations on their banking activities or their industrial, waste and pollution. And then on the other hand, when they've made such terrible business decisions that probably a first-year economics student could have told them isn't going to work out in the long run, they've position themselves within the economy to such an extent that they literally were too big to fail. And if Bush, who did most of the bailout money and then, continued under President Obama, hadn't have bailed them out, the whole damn economy would have collapsed.
Well, again, it's because of the fact that we have government and not true free market. There's nothing wrong with capitalism. True free market capitalism to where you and I, Peter, if I decide to sell you an item that I have and you say, Tom, it's only worth 10 bucks, and I say, well, I want 50, you say, nope, I'm going to walk away from that.
Tom, there never has been a free market. I mean, the capitalism never even it could not even establish it itself without the power of the political state coming to its side and acting as the advance guard of it. I mean, people didn't want capitalism. People fought against it. I mean, in cases everywhere around the world, that thousands, tens of thousands of people had to be shot down in order for the horrible conditions of capitalism capitalism and industrial capitalism to even take root. And the free market, the closest thing, I mean, there is no free market. I mean, you read Adam Smith and what have you, and he talks about, you know, that this nice little thing where you're offering me something for $10 and I'm saying, no, I'll give it to you at eight. It's a system that's always been run by economic elites that were able to buy every single government that ever existed. And when there wasn't government control, they had 12-year-olds in factories. They worked people 16 hours a day. They had the most unsafe condition. There wasn't a day off. And when people had the temerity to say, hey, we want a redistribution of income because we don't want to work 12 hours a day. We want to work 8 hours a day and we want the same pay, which is, that's a redistribution of income. They called out the cops. They called out the thugs. They called out the National Guard and shot people down in the street. They were shooting people in the back. The Chicago police were shooting people in the back in 1938 because they had they wanted $1 an hour more, an hour. And so there never was a free market. And whenever there is, when I hear the word free market, I know someone's trying to rob me.
I wonder, Tom, I wonder what your proposal is.
Well, my proposal is...
Let's all go to New Hampshire.
But obviously, you've been paying attention because you just made that comment. That is very good, Peter. At least you're paying attention.
Oh, good.
He does do that, yeah.
Yeah, the people... I know that. I've been listening to him
since 1978.
Yeah, we're both 12.
So my point is, I wish you would actually... Have you ever heard of Stefan Molyneux? I mean, these people are proposing ideas that have never been actually listened to. And when you listen to them, they are so, they make so much sense. It is so logical. You can't debate it.
Well, you know what, Tom? I think it's nonsense. I mean, I think they make, in other words, they make no sense whatsoever. They have no understanding of history. They have no understanding of the way the economy works. And their solutions could conceivably work for, a small state like New Hampshire, which has no sales tax, no income tax. This idea that there's not taxes. I mean, the whole idea to have a personal income tax, again, it's another thing that's pretty complicated. But one of the things that it would trying to stop was this plutocracy, the rule by the rich. I mean, we're still ruled by the rich now. It didn't work very well. But the idea was that you began to have some leveling process so that one person, like, for instance, the Koch brothers, even with all the government regulations and all the income tax and the corporate tax, these guys are working, they just got it from their daddy. They didn't, like, work their little fannies off. And so what they do, they take their billions of dollars and they fund these affairs like the Tea Party that are just, the shock troops for the wealthy. So they can pollute more. This is the free market. Hey, if you don't like this power company, go to an...
That's right.
There's only one. But
yeah.
We're on about this too much. Thanks for listening for so long, Tom. I appreciate it. Let's see. You know, one of the things, you know what the... you weren't here last week. I've been reading this book called Last Call, mm-hmm. The Rise and Fall of Prohibition.
Okay.
And it's going to be made into a PBS documentary by the man whose name I always forget. He did the one about jazz and about Civil War, right?
Oh, jeez. You know what I mean? Now, you know how the block.
Yeah, we'll get it. Don't even bother to email us, folks.
We know.
We'll remember it in a second. Anyway, that tax on booze was the fifth largest source of revenue for the United States government.
No kidding.
So they're going to say, well, wait a minute here. It's going to put a little crimp in our budget. So one of the very important things that filled the hole was the personal income tax, which mostly was on millionaires. On the wealthy,
right.
Of the period. Yeah.
No, they had anything.
One of the progressive reforms, and mostly Republicans, who then actually cared about the environment, cared some about ordinary people, unlike now.
Yeah, right. Ken Burns. something.
Yeah, I won't even tell you. I won't even tell you
anyway,
why I'm laughing.
Ken Burns, Peter.
Ken Burns, yeah. Did someone write that? Or did you remember?
I remembered.
All right. Here is Scott in Westland. Scott, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Jalene.
Hi.
It's Scott. Ken Burns, actually.
Yeah,
okay.
We
got that.
Oh, he just missed it.
There's a 30-second delay.
There's a delay. Right. I just cleared that up. Yeah. Thank you, Dom.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hi, Pete. Hi, Jalene. Well, I got three headlines, and I'm probably only going to get to talk about one of them. Okay.
Yeah.
One of them is, can Michigan Republicans get elected on their new pension tax? The Michigan Wetland Protection Act has been repealed. I talked about the DNR land auction already. There's a website for that, which is at the State of Michigan website. So I urge people to go to the DNR land auction website. But this is the most self-important and weighty and urgent thing that I was going to talk about. Okay. Does anybody stand to profit if the U.S. has to pay higher interest on its debt? Now, the funny thing is...
Now, who would? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, the thing is that now, actually, you might say sarcastically, some secret cabal of billionaires, actually, as you noted earlier, probably the two biggest creditors of the U.S. government are
China.
The Social Security Trust Fund and the Chinese.
Chinese, yeah, yeah.
But, okay, I think right now, and I'm not an expert on this, but I've heard it said that we pay something like a 3% interest rate, you know, on the debt that we owe, which is an incredibly low interest rate.
Yep.
So the thing is, you think that if we default, if the default is a default, it means that you don't get paid or you get pennies on the dollar. But actually, in the near term, if we defaulted and the U.S. had to start paying interest rate, it would be like one of those variable rate mortgages or a bad credit card contract where the lender arbitrarily increases your interest rate, which means that basically you never get out of debt.
Well, yeah, that means that everything it costs more because you're borrowing and and that's what's going to happen if they let it go into default. And I think if President Obama would just stand up to these Republicans and say, listen,
yeah,
we're having tax increases on the wealthy. We're going to, in fact, why don't we do this? Rather than letting the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy expire next year, why don't we cut them right now and, in fact, increase them? I mean, there's an article. What is this here? That the Wall Street Journal says, get ready for a 70% marginal tax rate. That would be the highest one. And it says the current, maybe 2013 is when it's, the current top federal rate of 35% is scheduled to rise to almost 40% in 2013. And that is for people making $250,000 a year. So, they're worried when before the top marginal tax rate was 90% under Eisenhower in the 50s. But your concern is well taken. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate that. Here, I miss this all the time.
What's that?
But we got a little message here from on our little screen.
Yeah.
From Sarah Athena. It says that postal worker called, says no taxpayer dollars go into the price of stamps. She says that although they are mismanaged, they are pretty self-sufficient. By they, she means the United States Postal Service. Yeah, I mean, they get the mail out.
Absolutely.
I don't have any other than the rates. For a small publication, I work with a small publication.
Right, yeah.
And those have gone through the roof. And partly those were insisted on by the big publishers trying to drive the smaller publishers out of business.
Oh, but this sounds just so familiar.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though. It's like Time and Newsweek and U.S. News and World Report. Who reads those anymore?
Yeah, seriously.
Hey, by the way, you know,
unless you're at the doctor's office.
Yes. And all those teabaggers who wanted, government, like Tom was saying. Don't tread on me. Freshman House Republicans who rode a wave of voter discontent into office last year vowed to stop out-of-control spending, but that has not stopped several of them from quietly trying to funnel millions of federal dollars into projects back home. In other words, these guys, these teabaggers, are frauds. They have pushed for dozens of projects in their districts, including military programs opposed by the president, replenishing beach sand lost to erosion, a $700 million bridge in Minnesota, and a harbor dredging project in South Carolina. Which, I mean, on the face of it, other than the military programs, probably all right. The first sentence, so the House Republicans did not ride a wave of voter discontent into office last year. What happened was the majority of people just stayed home and didn't vote.
Yep.
And there is not out-of-control spending. There is out-of-control spending on the military.
Well, according to Fox News, there is.
Yeah, on the military and on the wars. Again, those are inherited from from Bush, but you can't blame everything on Bush to the extent that Obama should have reversed all of this. And also, Obama was willing to pass an extension of these Bush tax cuts that went to his wealthy buddies to reward them after they had sunk the economy. And remember, they said, well, we wouldn't extend the unemployment benefits unless they extended. I mean, in other words, Obama said, well, I want to help the unemployed worker. And the Republicans will say, okay, we'll do that if you let us help the ultra-rich billionaires.
It seems to be working for them, huh?
Yeah. So there's not out-of-control spending. There is... I don't know what you call it. Out of control non-tax revenue.
There's out of control negotiating.
There you go. Here is Frank in Roseville. Hi, Frank. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Good. We're good.
Well, I just got a comment. You know, you're dumping on all these new Republican House members and that. You know, Obama's been in office for 2 years. He had full control. The Democrats have full control of the House and the Senate.
For 2 years,
They sat on their hands and they have done nothing.
Well, I mean, wait a minute. He was handed the worst reset. You know, I want to start defending Obama. I would love it if Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent of Vermont, would run and would make a wonderful president. And everything he says is so right on the mark. But... he got, against all odds, he got some semblance of a federal health program. I mean, what we really need is Medicare for everybody. He got don't ask, don't tell. And he put in a stimulus that should have been like four times larger, but, of course, was opposed by the Republicans. So there are a lot of accomplishments that he did, but he and the Democrats have not acted strong enough against this recession because... you know, because the Republicans just put up too much opposition and they fold. What do you think?
Well, I know from personal experience, I had a business for 25 years and I haven't had any kind of income since October of 2009. Now, I don't get any unemployment benefits. I didn't get a government bailout. All I get is a $200 Obama money in food stamps.
Wow.
I've got no health insurance. I've got no Medicaid because I don't qualify for it. Yet I'm 54 years old, and I'm in that age bracket where they're telling us you'll never have a job.
Right. But what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for Romney or one of those other guys? They'll just make it worse.
You know, also, it's not
What kind of choices? Barack Obama or
Michelle
Mitt Romney?
Bachman.
Well, let alone they get one of those real whack jobs in there.
But Peter, he's talking about October 2009. And my point is, what happened before that? Because it's right before Obama got elected, right? But it's not like he gets elected and then, bam, overnight everything happens. You got to think about what happened the 8 years prior that led up to the demise of this country.
If you want to blame an individual, I would say blame George Bush. If you want to blame a party, blame the Republicans for your plight. Have the Democrats, have Barack Obama moved in a manner that is forthright enough to solve the problem? No.
Yeah. Agreed.
I mean, I guess we all agree on that. But
I think he just inflated people's brains. Himself up for this.
He was going to find a cure for cancer.
I mean, he was going to do everything.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry to hear about that. I mean, I don't know. And I don't know if it's going to get any better. I mean, I almost hope that somebody like Romney or Huntsman or one of these guys that aren't completely crazy, gets in so people will go, oh, my God, things have just gotten worse. What was I doing? All right, thank you and good luck.
Yeah.
What a thing to have to say to somebody.
I know.
In a country that's the richest country in the world, you're hoping people have good luck. I mean, it's like I was saying last week at this GM reopening this facility in Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
1,700 jobs, 18,000 people came to get take part in the lottery. No, just a lottery to get an application.
Oh, my gosh.
They weren't even giving it to everybody. And the looks on these people, some of them were hopeful, some of them were depressed, some of them. But what a humiliation for people.
Yeah.
And folks, I mean, and I lost his name already. I'm sorry. I mean, the man that spoke, Stan that spoke earlier, what humiliation to a human being that have that did nothing at all to create this mess. Sounds, you know, was probably a good small businessman, Stan, a good worker, and have to put up with this. And but, I mean, you got to kind of look at what's going on here. This, you gave me two of these, so I think, I assume you do
not. I was overzealous in my preparation.
You do not have one. But the Republicans make big gains among white voters. The very headline is so offensive that if anyone is voting by color, that it is...
My gosh.
Yeah.
I really do believe people are. This is from the Pew Research Center.
Yeah, they're good folks. And here who... Well, here, wait a minute. You can see this... I thought there was something that said this a little... better than, but anyway, the people that that the Republicans have gained among whites, particularly young and low income. I mean, the Republican Party, maybe both these, maybe neither of these parties have the best interests of the average person at heart. Or, I mean, at least I always think the Democrats would like to, but they're hamstrung by the nature of the system. That is that everything is corporate finances. If the Democratic Party turned on its corporate financiers, as you know, the Republicans have corporate masters, the Democrats have corporate financiers. Am I saying that right? Yes. I mean, in England, well, in every left party in Europe is funded by labor unions, by ordinary associations of average people. That's where the money comes from there. And as long as Barack Obama and the Democrats, by the nature of this political system, have to raise not millions, but billions in order to maintain a toehold on political power, well, what are they going to do? You cannot bite the hand that feeds you. And both the Republican Party is the political expression of right-wing billionaires, of the greediest people on the planet, the richest people on the planet. They have no interest in you. And I don't even have to make any... exceptions. I don't think there's any billionaires listening. They don't care about you at all. I mean, look up George Carlin. They own you.
Yeah.
Got a few bad words in there, so if you're offended easily, don't go. But they own you. And that's the Republicans, you know, and they're coming, and he says, and they're coming after your Social Security.
Yeah, but
he said
they
he's
they
been
are.
Dead for a couple of years. So,
George was spot on.
Yeah, he was. So... where was this?
Well, when you look at this graph, you know, about the party identification among white voters going up.
You can read that graph? It's just making gives me a little nausea.
The bar graph, it's pretty astounding to see how those numbers have risen. And so what is your point, Peter, that you think these are these young little white racists?
I don't think they're racist, and I don't even know.
Are they just afraid?
I don't even really get it. There was that... That the majority of white people in this country voted for John McCain and Sarah Palin by 2 percentage points. In places like Alabama, 80% of white people voted for somebody that would have moved immediately to strip Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, everything that is...
It wouldn't have taken 2 years.
Yeah, wouldn't have taken 2 years. And of course, I mean, there would have been a collapse of such catastrophic nature of the economy. Well, maybe McCain would have just done the same thing that Bush did, just keep bailing out the banks. All right, let's take a break. We're a little overdue. Peter Werbage, Lean. Well, hey. We hire a guy to tell you.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Vital Performance Fitness in Southfield, and Retrofit Studio in Royal Oak.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Is your air conditioning working? Do your carpets need cleaning? Or maybe you're ready to have your house painted. Big or small, whatever your home improvement need. Now it's easy to find the right home pro for your project. Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource with instant access to pre-screened remodelers, roofers, maids, and many other home contractors. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic has a network of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. If you need an electrician, plumber, architect, or any other home service, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
One little fish oil pill. You know, this powerful little pill is great for your heart, that it's great for your joints. It even has powerful benefits for your skin and brain function. But the fish oils of today are sadly incomplete because they don't contain the super antioxidant power of clinically proven krill oil that can increase joint comfort by 28% in just 7 days. Until now. Introducing the free bottle giveaway of Krill Omega-3 from Purity Products, our most powerful fish oil formula ever. The only thing our advanced Krill Omega-3 fish oil is missing is the price. Because right now, we're offering anyone a full-size bottle of our krill oil as part of a nationwide free trial. Just call 1-800-950-5868. To request yours, you can't go to stores. The only way to get your free bottle is to go to the phone. The number is 1-800-950-5868. Call now and claim your bottle absolutely free. 1-800-950-5868. That's 1-800-950-5868.
101 WRIF.
Hi, this is Mark Schmeier from Creed.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad.
This is Chris.
This is Brian from Cabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Rocks.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. This is our last segment, so please join us on the air. And we just got the phone number at 1 a.m. I still haven't figured which interview I'm going to play.
Last minute game decision? Yeah. Okay.
You know what? I think, you know, actually, this woman, now I'm going to do David Swanson. He's a campaigner for RootsAction.org. He says we're getting screwed by both parties in the debt ceiling talks, and he is one of the people that's calling for a draft Bernie Sanders campaign. If you don't know who Bernie Sanders is,
and
just
you
Google
don't mean
the man.
Draft into the arms.
No. Draft for president. Winston Smith writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, Bernie Sanders is the only hope for America, but the majority of voters are too stupid to realize that. You know what? I actually, Winnie, I don't agree with
Winnie.
We're going to be blackmailed again because we're going to say, well, you can either vote for Barack Obama or you can vote for either if some one of these nutball Republicans gets in, or somebody like, you know, to be the Republican candidate, or in fact, it's even sort of a mainstream guy like Mitt Romney, and you're going to know that you think Barack Obama's bad. Well, all of these guys are worse. So, and people are going to say, well, if you vote for Bernie Sanders, that's going to assure that, you know, a right-wing Republican is going to get in. Oh, yeah. And also, very interesting lady, whose name is Carlene Faith. She's the author of Unruly Women, The Politics of Confinement and Resistance.
What? Who's unruly?
These are women in the joint. Joint being slang for prison.
Okay.
It's like it's got other applications, too.
Because I know I can be unruly at times.
You are. Yeah, you are indeed. Where was you? I picked up something and it wasn't. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's about. Here. Columbia student to be sentenced to 6 months because he was selling drugs. 6 months
and you
in
mean
jail.
Columbia.
Yeah, Columbia University, not Colombia, man.
See.
Yeah. 30 years. Oh, no, he's not 30 years old. He's a student. He's going to be sentenced on August 30th, serving his time on Rikers Island. Oh, that'll be an experience in New York City. So he's getting 6 months in jail, then 5 years probation. That friend of mine served 20 years for the same offense.
Really?
Just,
my gosh.
Just got out. Yeah.
And now it's overcrowded. Is that part of it? Or
no.
Good
no.
lawyer paid his way out?
He finished his sentence.
No. I mean this
guy. Oh, this guy. No, you know, he's rich.
And he's, no, that's what I mean. Yeah, he paid his way, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, we talked at the beginning of the show about this horrible incident that occurred in Norway, the mass slaughter of all these young people by this, it wasn't even crazed, by this Christian nationalist terrorist. And who, said he was against multiculturalism, so he goes and he kills. I mean, it could have been that some of the people on this island, I saw some of the people that survived, and they were of Asian ancestry, although you could hear from their accent that, they'd probably been born in Norway.
They were the
children. But then I said that there was something happy here, and that's after a long wait, same-sex couples can marry in New York. And I saw the films of it. The first people to do it were Phyllis Siegel, 76 years old, and Connie Coppola, 84, who had been living together in Manhattan for 23 years. And Mrs. Coppola used a gray walker as they were married by the city clerk. Isn't that nice? 823 couples. And here you are. I mean, I know that a lot of guys, they see women kiss and go,
but you think
there was a couple of guys, there was guys kissing mayor and they don't like that. Mayor Michael R. Bloomberg of New York said he would officiate at the wedding of his two senior city hall officials at a ceremony at Gracie Mansion where they live in Brooklyn. The borough president, Marty Markowitz, planned to open borough hall for a marathon series of weddings complete with free cake and champagne. And the tears that these people shed, the love that you could see between them, whatever, if you got some biblical thing on it, probably doesn't matter much to you. But for most of us that just support human beings connecting, and then outside, this wasn't shown. They had actually, I don't know if they had other people, but they showed this right-wing Jewish group just saying that homosexuality is worse than murder.
I mean, what these people are truly nuts.
Yeah, they are.
They absolutely come from a place of hate.
So they looked, and gays, like all people, are different shapes and ages
like everybody else.
So there were, it wasn't all young, thin guys that just come out of the club. It was just, some middle-aged guys, kind of paunchy and all that.
Yeah.
And it was just so sweet to think that here these people finally, the government recognized them as human beings and having full rights.
Like, really? I mean, how anyone can judge someone and not consider them a full human being? I'm sorry, but karma is a bitch. Get over it.
Yeah. How about this? A Jewish couple is suing a Vermont inn claiming it refused to host their fall wedding reception. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was a lesbian couple.
Yeah.
That
was the last story.
Yeah. The point being that
maybe they were Jewish and lesbian.
Yeah, they could have been. But it violated Vermont's Fair Housing and Public Accommodations Act, which prohibits inns, hotels, motels, and other establishments from turning away patrons based on sexual orientation, also race, religion, or what have you.
Yeah.
And people would think, and you'd say, well, it's their place. They have the right to, vape. Find those people offensive. Well, what if you didn't want to, you didn't want Jews to stay in your hotel?
Just put up a sign that says, we are intolerant people.
Yeah.
So if you're intolerant,
right? You don't want Africans or
come
Asian.
Come on in. Yeah.
I mean, you can't do that. I mean, this is the public square. I mean, you can say, I will only have you know, white people in my house.
With blue eyes.
With blue eyes and blonde hair and that go Sig Heil. You can have those people. Those people, you know, you can say it's my house and this is, but when you start going out and having a public business, then you got to accept, you know, whoever is coming in. And if you don't like it, too effing bad.
Too bad. You know, it's like, really.
Get over just it, as Jolene said.
Get over it and evolve. Evolve already.
All right, let's get some more calls on the air here. I don't have a name here, but hi, you're on the air if you can figure out who you are.
Hello, Peter. It's Maurice. How you
Maurice!
Where you been?
What's happening,
I've
man?
Been working. You know, I'm going to tell you something. There's only one person you can hold responsible for where everything is in this country, and that's Clinton when he signed a Glass-Steagall deal back in 99.
Clinton.
The powers that be, one of them, you know, just look at it like this, Peter. Did you notice when the price of gas went up, you saw less cars on the highway on the street?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now the bus system is screwed up. How can a person get to work? They lose their job, lose their house, put them on the street. The government want them to be kissing their ass because they want the government to say they but that's how governments are.
Yeah.
We need to fire our government. We don't need them.
Well, you're an anarchist like us.
Look at you go, Maurice.
Hey, the Glass-Steagall Act, which was put in place in the 1930s, and the Republicans wanted it repealed because it would take the regulations off the bank. They could start doing the kind of manipulations, the financial manipulations that finally destroyed the economy. All the Democrats voted against it. All the Republicans voted for it. Clinton said, hey, man, they're on my butt about the Monica Lewinsky, so he signed it.
I better do something Republican.
Yeah. Yeah.
To fix
didn't
it.
Help them. They still were all over them. And half those Republicans, they were going out on their wives anyway, like Newt Gingrich. And what's the guy that was really doing it? Was kind of like the real pit bull on Clinton. And he was doing the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Jeez. Thank you, Maurice, as usual. Thanks for being on the broadcast. I was just about, you know, it's like amazing. I'm just about to go to this person. They've been waiting a long time, and they hang up. Here's
Haitian's grasshopper.
Yeah. Is it? Hey, you're on the air from Clinton Township. What's your name?
Mavorin.
Mavorin. Okay, I guess that's what it says. Hi, Mavorin.
Hi, I had to switch two phones.
Mavon.
Just Mavorin.
Mavorin.
Mavorin. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Where'd that name come from?
Mavorning. It's an Irish. Maureen's the American.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
I sure.
Yeah, I love it.
Anyways, my question to you guys is, I was in a car accident back in 02, and I found out that I had two birth defects. I have injuries from the accident. I'm on Social Security disability.
Uh-huh.
And I did vote for Obama.
Okay.
I'm scared to what I hear on the news because, of course, I'm sitting here watching TV, you know, the news.
You know what you got to do, Mavorin? You got to turn your radio completely off.
Oh, yeah, turn your radio off.
I'm listening to you on my assurance phone.
Oh, okay. I think it's real easy to get confused when you watch the news. When you watch all of those things, it's easy to get kind of, you know.
Well, I wanted to say hi, Pete and Julie, first.
Hi.
Actually, because I listen to you guys.
You're on the air right now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. But, no, I keep hearing that my Social Security is going to be going away. They're going to be taking.
Well, let me say this. There will not be in the short run. They're not going to abolish Social Security, although there is a whole faction, and a fairly large one, within the Republican Party that would completely like to eliminate Medicare, Social Security disability. That's what they talk about, like that guy Tom earlier, the free market. Whenever you hear the free market, unless you're a millionaire or above, you know they're going to try to take something away from you. I mean, the people that aren't a millionaire and are talking about that stuff, I don't know where they're coming from. But anyway. What they're going to try to do is rather than take the money from the people that caused the problem, they're going to take the money from the people that can at least afford to pay the cost of
like
the mess
you.
They made, like you. And what's not present for you is not strong enough defense. So, I mean, like I say, this is what the Republicans want to do. This may be what Barack Obama and maybe even the Democrats won't do it, but the Barack Obama is willing to agree to. And he shouldn't agree to it, and he should be criticized to it. And when people, and it becomes harder and harder when people say, well, look, I voted for him, and this guy is just starting to sign off on Republican programs. It certainly makes no sense whatsoever to vote for, the Republican, because, they're your absolute worst enemy. They are literally your enemy. They are trying to destroy the fundamental basis of what's keeping you healthy, because I assume you have Medicaid as well. The problem is, if the Democrats aren't going to do it, who's going to do it? I mean, that's what we're stuck, because I said earlier, is it that if you don't have a vibrant labor movement like that is leading the challenges to these austerity programs in England and France and Greece and people like that, who's going to do it? You know, the people that are being financed by the corporations? No, I don't think so. Mavoran, good luck. I keep saying that too much tonight. I appreciate you calling, and I hope everything works out for you. Can you imagine that? Richest country in the world. We're hoping people don't, somebody who's disabled, that we hope that luck handles
it
for them.
This woman is sitting around stressing out that she's going to, she stretches that money out every month the way it is. And finds ways to make do. But
you know
now
what?
She's worried about it even tightening down more.
We've got about 4 minutes. We got to get see if we can get everybody in. Robin from Rochester, how you doing? Tell us quickly, because all of a sudden we're almost out of time.
Really quickly, everybody wants to blame the Republicans, the Democrats, the programs. I think the biggest problem in America is complacency and entitlement issues.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody wants to say, well, they're taking away this program, or they started this program, or they're taxing me here, or they're not taxing them. Well, the rule in my household that I was raised with is if you are not allowed to complain about something unless you are willing to do something about it.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Thank you so. Like I always say, though, it's sometimes tough to find out what you can do. Here's Fred in Detroit. Fred, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter and Jolene.
Hi, Fred.
All I wanted to say was, whoever the independent candidate is, all he's going to do is present a huge target for the right.
Mean for
take up, or take up. Away votes from the Democrats.
Well, it's not. I'm not even so much worried about that. If he got in there, The conservatives are going to turn on them with everything they got, like they would any Democrat or any other progressive person.
Well, they think any Democrat holding the presidency is illegitimate. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Remember that whole birth certificate thing.
Right. All right. Thank you, Fred. Appreciate your call. Here is Danny in Southgate. Danny, give me the headlines. We're almost out of time.
Hi, Peter and Julian. This is Danny. I talked to you guys about the no smoking ban a while back.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you were talking about the taxes. About I got a letter in the mail, and it had Rick Snyder's name on it. It says anybody's house that's valued at $50,000 or more, the mill is going to go up. And any house below $50,000, they're still going to be taxed, but the tax won't be as high. So he's going to go out and start raising the mill and all the taxes.
I thought he said mail.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to have to check on that one, and I'm almost out of time. So I will check that out. Here's James in Pontiac. James, you got about three sentences. Give me the headline.
All right. Two things. First thing I'd like to say is the Tea Partiers / Republicans are very, very adamant about our Constitution, but they tend to forget that the preamble to the Constitution includes the formation of our nation is to help promote the general welfare. That is in there. They need to check that out.
That's absolutely correct.
Yes.
Yep.
That little important part.
Let me leave it at that. Normally we could talk for a while, but I've got just a little bit more. George, go ahead. You're on the air and got maybe 20, 30 seconds. Go ahead. A few sentences, please.
Hi.
Hi. Well, Peter, I would like to say that I was listening to Tom earlier in St. Clair Shores, and he mentioned that the, or he was asking about the stealing of the wealth from the $20 million earner.
What is it? They don't care about him. Why does he care about them?
You wanted to steal his $18 million and give it to the government, who is totally inefficient, and how would it be spent?
Right.
How would you secure that it would be spent to any good, since you agreed that they...
Oh, that the government's inefficient? Well, I mean, the government does do things like build roads or build schools, pave roads. We could hire back a lot of these people that are first responders. We could open libraries in Troy, stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff we could do with it. Can you guarantee it? No. We need citizen involvement. If we could have citizens, for instance, examining every expenditure in government, citizens' commissions, rather than legislators that go out to lunch with lobbyists, we could do it. So, I mean, this whole system needs massive reform, that's for sure. Great question, George. Thank you. Jalene Jordan, thank you.
Peter, thank you.
Yes.
Thanks for everyone for calling in.
Sarah,
thank you,
Athena.
Sarah and Athena, for answering the phones and getting our podcast together. It'll be up at noon.
Yeah, and stay tuned for the interviews. We're going to talk about. We're going to talk with somebody that that has some solutions.
Great.
Right. Next week we'll do it.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you own life insurance or are thinking of buying any, why spend more than you have to? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how we do it. We monitor the products offered by dozens of the most well-respected brand-name life insurance companies you trust so that you get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. 20 and 30-year rates are also available. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life plans that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Take 5 minutes and call AccuQuote for your free quote at 800-654-2075. Find out how much you can save on your life insurance. Call AccuQuote today at 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
These days, carrying a mortgage can overwhelm even the strongest person.
Don't I know that?
But there is a way to help ease your struggle, especially if you're facing foreclosure. One option may be advice from a certified foreclosure prevention specialist. It's absolutely free. Don't struggle. Learn more at www.makinghomeaffordable.gov. That's makinghomeaffordable.gov. Because foreclosure is not a foregone conclusion. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health,
but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Well, I think probably almost everyone knows that there's this big battle over how do we raise the debt ceiling, what allows the United States to borrow to continue on and not default on its debts. And the Republicans are demanding a debt reduction deal, no taxes, but they want to cut spending tremendously. I think a lot of this is hard to follow for most of us. I mean, what in the hell is going on? I mean, on one hand, we know that there's cutbacks going on at every level of government, particularly in our cities and our states. We know a lot of our states are bust, our cities are bust. And so maybe we should think about cutting back on everything. That's what would happen, for instance, if one of us lost our jobs, and many of us have, or we got a big cutback on our salary, we'd have to cut spending, right? So, are these Republicans onto something? Well, we'll ask David Swanson. He was just on the program recently. He is a campaigner with Roots Action. That's rootsaction.org. It's an online activist network, and we're going to talk to him about debt reduction, raising the debt ceiling. We're reaching him at his office in Charlottesville, Virginia, the home of Thomas Jefferson. David Swanson, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Hi, Peter. Great to be here.
Well, there are some problems that we're facing as a nation. I mean, there's no doubt about that, correct?
Absolutely. I like how you framed the introduction. You know, there's this debate between those who say the government must be responsible like a family and can't spend deficit spending and must balance its budget, and that's just the responsible thing to do. And then there are those who look back to how FDR handled the Depression and said, look, when the economy is broken, when the people of the country are broke, the government has to borrow and spend money to restore the economy, and then the revenue starts coming into the government, and then you can work with a balanced budget. And both of those positions make a lot of sense, but they both leave out the giant, you know, gorilla in the room here, which is that over half of the money our government spends in terms of its discretionary spending every year is on a giant military machine, the likes of which the world has never seen before, you know, that's seven times bigger than the next competing nation on the planet, that the vast majority of Americans don't have much use for and would love to see cut and its wars ended. So I think that, you know, the answer from certain people who call themselves progressives like I do is, you know, yes, the problem is not the debt and the deficit, but the solution does indeed involve cutting spending. Just cut it where it should be cut, not where it needs to continue.
Well, David Swanson, don't we have to need this enormous military to protect ourselves against there must be somebody that we're protecting ourselves. I mean, essentially, we're spending, if you add really everything up, it comes out to about $1 trillion a year. I mean, because a lot of the war expenditures are hidden in other parts of the budget, like nuclear weaponry and all that. So in many ways, it's just this enormous bloated leftover from the Cold War, which was really Keynesian economics on steroids, a big transfer of wealth from us, the taxpayer, through the military, and that had some accelerator effect on the economy. But nobody believes any longer that that is the most efficient way to spend our dollars, our tax dollars. Am I correct?
Well, you're correct, except for the leftover from the Cold War, in the sense that it's more than doubled since the Cold
right.
War, right? I mean,
right.
You lose the big enemy, and you more than double the military machine under the pretense that you're taking on non-state terrorist actors for whom the giant military is no deterrent whatsoever. I mean, you can argue that a nation should have military protection as long as other nations have militaries. Okay, fine, maybe you need a military as big as the next biggest one in the world, or two or three times as big. What the heck? But make weapons that are defensive. Behave as if that's actually your intention. Instead, we have a world that's completely dominated by the U.S. military, that's carved up the continents into different commands, that has bases in over 100 other countries, 1,000 bases abroad, that it is absolutely dominating the globe and outer space and cyberspace in a way that's never been imagined before, and that no two countries could do, you know, without destroying the earth. And so the idea that it's protecting us, when it's aggravating tensions and increasing terrorism and proliferating weapons and propping up dictators and destroying the environment and our economy and our civil liberties and the rest of it, it is just crazy. You know, there has to be some point at which making the thing even bigger doesn't make it any more of a deterrent to anybody else. And we're way beyond that point.
Sure. I'm reminded in Iraq, they were talking to a guerrilla fighter who was fighting against the United States. And he had a Kalashnikov and no shoes. He said, "I like to fight barefoot." And I'm thinking, this is what we're spending our military dollars fighting. But anyway, let's get back to the federal debt crisis. Maybe we even ought to put that. Well, you can either put that in quotes or you don't have to. I mean, we're obviously at a key tipping point now. And the idea is, are we going to cut things like the military? Are we going to cut things, what's so-called entitlement programs, which really aren't entitlement programs, or to the extent that they are, we deserve them, however you cut it. So there's expenditures and there's revenue flow. And a lot of the revenue flow has been has been limited because of things like the Bush-era tax cuts. So why are people like the Democrats, led by President Obama, actually, as he said, putting Social Security and Medicare on the table when virtually nobody wants to have any cuts in that other than the Republicans?
Because they're funded by Wall Street. President Obama is the world record holder in terms of money taken in from Wall Street contributors to an election campaign. Obama and the Republicans both want to cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. But you're absolutely right. The American people do not. You know, the American people want to end the wars and cut the military, but even more so, they want to tax the incredibly wealthy and to tax corporations and investors and estates. You know, this is overwhelmingly the first choice for what the public would do if we were represented in our government. We would tax rich people. And, you know, one very easy way to do that, of course, is to just sit back and do nothing and allow the so-called Bush tax cuts, which at this point ought to be called the Bush-Obama tax cuts, to expire, or allow them to expire only on the super wealthy. This is a way to generate huge amounts of money. We have created a plutocracy that runs the agenda and the communications and the discussion of this, while 400 individuals have as much money as the poorer half of our nation put together. This is a level of income and wealth disparity that shames most of the world. That is a scandalous idea.
It's really 19th century. I'm sorry, I cut you off at the end, but I mean, it's really a 19th century concept. I mean, that's the way it used to be. There was 150 years of progressive legislation of income tax that mostly at the beginning taxed the wealthy and continued to do so till about 1961. Tell us a little about that, about the taxation rates of the rich. I mean, they're talking about, ooh, maybe we should pump up the rate on the ultra wealthy another 2%, which I think would bring them up to either 35 or 37%. Back in 1961, the wealthy would have thought that was an enormous tax cut, right?
Right. Unless we're talking about capital gains, when or it's at 15%, or we're talking about corporations taxes, which are often
zero
or less.
Yeah.
And what's on the table in Washington, D.C. from this so-called Gang of Six and other proposals is actually to continue lowering and eliminating taxes on corporations and on corporations' foreign profits and on the super wealthy. I mean, the proposals that are on the table and in the debates in the corporate media are about cutting taxes further and leaving the military in place, leaving the, you know, the prison industry in place, but going after Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. This is the proposal from both sides, while the American public is against it. I think, you know, some applause and some encouragement is deserved by Detroit's Congressman Conyers and 74 other Congress members thus far who have signed on to a letter that the Progressive Caucus has sent to Minority Leader Pelosi, saying effectively, we will not cut Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. Now, you know, such commitments in letters, as a rule, have been completely tossed aside, and everybody has gone ahead and done what their party's leadership told them to do. But in the hopes that they might stand by it, it is certainly a good thing that they have put their names down on that letter.
David Swanson is my guest. He's a campaigner with Roots Action. That's an online activist network. They welcome new people. You can go to rootsaction.org. You're listening to the Peter Werbe Show. My website is peterwerbe.com, and there'll be a link to David's website as well. Now, you know, I obviously think the world of your social analysis. I wouldn't invite you on the show. But when you say that there's a, you know, a continuity of interest between, say, the Republicans and Barack Obama and the Democrats, because they're all funded by Wall Street, which of course is true. I mean, you know, money makes the world go round, unfortunately. And he who pays the piper, you know, calls the tune. I got about three more cliches, but I'll save them till later. But this doesn't make any sense for the Democrats. I mean, I have heard numerous friends of mine saying, you know what, I'm not even voting in the next election. Screw Barack Obama. And, you know, I've heard some of these talk show hosts that get, you know, all excited and say, wait a minute, you know, Barack Obama's done this, the Democrats have done this, you know, don't ask, don't tell, you know, and 100 other little things. You know, they got a bad health care plan, but it's still, you know. So, but yet, the it would seem that the rock that would split, there I go, that was one of the cliches, that would be that if the Democrats agree to a cut in Medicare or in Social Security. So this makes no sense. I mean, Barack Obama and the Democrats will still get funding for their campaigns, even if they say, listen, I will go to the wall. You will be the ones, the Republicans, to let this go, the country go into default. And if, but I will not agree to any cuts in these programs, period. Why in the world wouldn't they do that?
Well, presumably, President Obama's advisors are telling him that the people who are paying enough attention and swearing to work against him, or at least to abandon him if he sacrifices Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid, are a small group of people, that we're not the bulk of the nation.
You mean like you and me?
you and me and many of
my
listeners are in the analysis of White House political strategists and Obama campaign strategists in Chicago are not the bulk of the country and have very little to do with funding the campaign. And so when the progressive groups, the PCCCs and the MoveOn.orgs and so forth, start threatening not to volunteer for the Obama campaign or not to fund the Obama campaign, you know, the Obama campaign doesn't care all that much when they're swearing up and down that they will still vote for him, right? I mean, we haven't got major institutions, we haven't got well-funded organizations with the nerve and the backbone and the integrity to say we will not vote work against him. We will protest him. You know, we are organizing. Many of us are organizing a protest in Washington beginning on October 6th. October2011.org, and you know, the labor unions and the major well-funded groups are not yet joining in.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because there's always this political blackmail. I mean, I always think I was, I think it was like 2006, that the Illinois United Auto Workers put in like something like $13 million into bankrolling the Democrats against the Republicans, and they got something of a majority, and they had a 10-point program that they wanted enacted by the Democratic legislature and a Democratic governor, whose name shall go unmentioned. And of those 10 points, not a single one got passed. So it was like they threw $13 million to the wind, or at least they didn't have the Republican governor. And that's the thought. I mean, even if the Republicans come up with somebody somewhat palatable, somewhat, and I emphasize that, like Huntsman or Romney, the unions will say, we cannot allow these Republicans to get in. So they will put all their money and all their people into, reelecting Barack Obama.
But it's even worse than not getting your 10 points, right? I mean, they're not getting the right to strike or the right to strike in solidarity. They're not even getting the Employee Free Choice Act, you know, but if we had had a President McCain, we would be keeping Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, right? It is only a Democratic president who can do these things. When Bush was president, the labor unions stopped him from undoing Social Security. When Clinton was president, Monica Lewinsky stopped him. We don't have a way to recruit a new Monica Lewinsky, but, you know, theoretically.
There's always one lurking around, David, don't they? Yeah, but go ahead.
Let us hope. But you know, the labor union officers are wrong about their members, and President Obama's strategists may be wrong about the country. I mean, you look at Lyndon Johnson's strategists, drove him out of the White House. You look at Bush Sr.'s strategists, drove him out of the White House. Bush Jr. had to steal his second election, just like the first one. I mean, it is not unprecedented for these people to make the wrong calculation, and it certainly looks to me like Obama is doing that.
Well, David Swanson, we say this is a personal matter, but you're a public figure and a public intellectual. Do you plan to vote for Barack Obama for re-election?
No, absolutely not, unless, you know, there's some kind of dramatic conversion where he becomes a completely different person.
What if it's Michelle Bachmann or Herman Cain or one of those bottom feeders?
Yeah,
at least I gave you pause. I know. It won't be.
The problem is that what's going to have to happen to change this country is going to happen in between elections. You know, the people of Tunisia and Egypt and Greece and Spain and Iran and Ukraine and Mexico, I mean, the world understands this better than we do. You have to go and impose your will on your government in between elections. You can't just choose the lesser evil every 4 or 8 years and expect things to improve. Because look at what happens. Every time we get two choices who are both more evil than anybody we've seen before. And you do the rational thing and you pick the less evil of the two, and 4 or 8 years later down the road, you've got two characters who are more evil than anybody you saw that time. And so you're on a downward slope and you're repeating the same procedure over and over again, which is, you know, a definition of insanity. We have to jump out of this box that says, you know, either we will tolerate the destruction of our society and our natural environment, or we'll put this lunatic Michelle Bachmann in the White House. You know, those can't be the only two choices.
One would hope not. David Swanson is my guest. He works with RootsAction.org. There'll be a link on my website as well, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. David, what is RootsAction.org, and what does that mean to be an online activist network? Let you answer that, and I'll ask you a sub-question about it. What is RootsAction? RootsAction, what does it do?
Well, you know, technologically, it's not brand new. I mean, it's the same thing that MoveOn.org is, except that it doesn't take its direction from the leadership of the Democratic Party or the leadership of the Progressive Caucus. It takes its direction from its organizers and its members, and the progressive agenda of peace and justice that it's working for. So it's a website that's building an email list of activists, and we've done things like push back against the language that the House passed in the Defense Authorization Act this year that would have effectively given all future presidents enormous power to launch wars, quote unquote, legally. We have been successful in that, and it's been taken out of the Senate version. And so you can affect things. But the agenda that Roots Action has of peace and justice and of the rule of majority opinion on things like taxing the rich and ending the wars and cutting the military and breaking through this, you know, manufactured crisis of this of the debt ceiling is an agenda that's not going to be shaped by a political party, and that's actually a pretty unique characteristic.
We're talking about the federal debt crisis, and we're recording this on Thursday. You're listening to this on Sunday. For all we know, they may have come, the gang of six, these six senators, may have come to a conclusion about all this. But I'm just looking at our news site here, and it says a new bipartisan plan to reduce government borrowing would target some of the most cherished tax breaks enjoyed by millions of families in exchange for lowering overall tax rates for everyone. So isn't that, I mean, what planet are these people? I think they're on planet Pluto. That's you mentioned. I mean, I meant for you earlier, David Swanson, to define a plutocracy. It essentially means the rule of the rich, and that was used very commonly 100 years ago by people that opposed the rule of the impacted wealthy at that time. So many taxpayers would face higher taxes, a total of at least $1.2 trillion over the next decade. So this is looting, essentially. I like to use that. I mean, this is an economy based on looting, and it all goes to the high side, of course. So the Republicans are saying, pardon me, no new taxes. Sounds like somebody, a president we once had. Yet here, are they serious about this? I mean, where are the pitchforks and torches? Where are people out in the public square? That seems to be what's missing.
Well, it's coming. It's coming October 6th, which is when the war in Afghanistan goes into its second decade, and when this new austerity budget kicks in for the new fiscal year. It's coming, and people should go to October 2011, October2011.org, and find out and join in. But this is looting driven by a fraudulent, ginned-up, phony crisis, right? I mean, the debt ceiling is just an arbitrary line that was raised 19 times under President Bush Jr., voted to be raised by many of these same Congress members. They've simply manufactured a phony crisis as a means to accomplish things that they could not otherwise dream of accomplishing, namely hacking into the most popular and successful programs our government's ever come up with that are not part of the budget at all. Social Security funds itself. It's doing just fine, thank you. But this is an opportunity they have found to try to loot it.
You know, it's interesting. A friend of mine, I don't know whether this is a common phrase or not, he talks about the Great Settlement, which was the New Deal. That is to say that in that period that it was decided that the wealthy would give up quite a bit in terms of providing Social Security, allowing labor unions to organize, which would mean wages would go up. And that occurred like from the, you know, the Roosevelt administration, you know, through to the early 1970s. And that's been broken ever since. And now we're just slowly spiraling back to the social configurations of the 19th century, where we're going to have this small ruling class, 400 mostly men, that are all, would I see in one of your articles that they're all billionaires now, the whole every?
Yes, indeed, 400 yeah. Billionaires.
And then here in the city where I'm living, they're you know, the city's only open 4 days a week because, you know, we can't afford any. In other cities, closing libraries, want to sell off assets. There's got to be a time at which people say, you know, this is no more. Well, but it doesn't. Yeah. Part of the problem is there's the apparatus for resistance hasn't been created. So tell us again on October 6th, is it 2011?
Yes, indeed. This is
Saturday, October 6th.
Until you know. Decades after the fact, people will insist on calling it a march or a rally or whatever, you know, fits into their patterns of thought, but it isn't. It's a movement that is inspired by the Arab Spring and the reactions that civilized nations have to abuse of power by their governments around the world. We are going to go on October 6th to Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., and from there, day after day, shut down buildings, shut down offices, block the functioning of this machine that works on behalf of the wars and Wall Street until we begin to achieve some success and to build a movement that will push back independent of parties on behalf of the public will. So we will almost certainly be there October 7th and 8th and 9th and 10th until we begin to achieve something. And there won't be any pitchforks and there won't be any torches. There will be absolute nonviolence. But nonviolence has proven many, many times over the past century, and empirical studies have looked at this and found that nonviolent responses to tyranny and abuses of power have been over twice as effective as violent ones, and that's just in the immediate impact, not counting the predictable blowback and repercussions of using violence.
We're out of time, but give me the website for the October 6th event again.
Yeah, October2011.org.
Okay, October2011.org. And one of the things, since if 2% of the country came out, it would be this enormous rally. But let's assume that people do that. 98% of the people listening are from here in the Detroit area and wherever else people are listening aren't going to come out to this. And so they shouldn't just watch us on television, probably because it won't even be noticed by the television folks, that think about doing things here. You can have your own rallies in your neighborhood, your churches, your union, local halls, all that stuff. You don't have to wait, because the people that have ill intent with our lives, they never sleep, it seems. David Swanson, as usual, I want to thank you so much for being part of the broadcast. David Swanson works with Roots Action. You can go to rootsaction.org. Also, October2011.org to hook into this event in Washington. Thanks so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Oh, thank you, Peter.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
What do you see yourself doing a few years from now? Thinking about a career is one thing, but preparing for a career is what really counts. If an education in information technology, electronics technology, or drafting and design could help you prepare, then check out the technology-focused programs offered at ITT Technical Institute. Call ITT Tech at 800-741-5123. At ITT Tech, you can develop knowledge and skills to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days a week, and financial aid's available for those who qualify. So if you want to prepare for a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education. Get started by calling ITT Tech for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's ITT Tech. 800-741-5123. For important information about these programs, go to programinfo.itt-tech.edu. Are you an inventor? Or do you know an inventor who would like to attempt to have an idea or invention patented and submitted to industry? For free information on how to get started, call InventHelp toll-free at 1-800-762-7000. InventHelp is America's largest invention company. Their referrals have helped inventors secure more than 7,000 patents, and they can provide free inventors information for you. Find out how to record your invention's date of origination and get an informative brochure and other material of interest to new inventors. Get started by calling 1-800-762-7000. Even if you have an idea for improving an existing product, you'll want to get this free inventor's information from InventHelp. Find out how to try to patent your invention and submit it to industry. Call now to get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-762-7000. That's 1-800-762-7000.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services' term life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is all about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke.
All insurance companies are going to price that differently. We'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a man, 40 years old, who takes blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price, $21 a month.
Call 1-800-928-6929 and see how affordable term life insurance can be. That's 1-800-928-6929. 1-800-928-6929. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
101 WRIF.
What's up, everybody? This is Sully from Godsmack.
Hello, Motor City. This is Mike McCready from Pearl Jam.
Hello, Motor City. This is Peter Page from Led Zeppelin. Your radio's locked on 101 WRIF. If it rocks, it's on the roof.
Everything that rocks.
Attention, if you're attempting to lose weight, please stay tuned for an important opportunity. In a 6-month clinical study, participants lost an average of 30 pounds without changing their eating habits or routine. Now Sensa is conducting a market trial in this listening area. If you're trying to lose weight, you are eligible to try Sensa free for 30 days. Call 1-800-714-9593 now to request your free trial. Participation in this free trial does not require any dieting, pills, or change in lifestyle. In fact, we only ask that you continue eating the foods you love. Just use clinically proven Sensa, the same weight loss breakthrough you've seen on Extra, Dateline NBC, and America's Newsroom. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. If you want to lose weight, you are eligible to participate in this market trial. For your 30-day free trial, you must call this number now. 1-800-714-9593. That's 1-800-714-9593. 1-800-714-9593.
Do you know someone who's having a birthday this month? Don't let the date sneak up and catch you unprepared. Have ProFlower send beautiful birthday flowers. They make flower deliveries easy and affordable. And get this incredible radio special. Yours right now. 100 stunning birthday blooms plus a free glass vase for just $19.99. Play it smart. Go online to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. Why overpay at a florist when you can get huge savings on one full 100 stunning birthday blooms for just $19.99 at ProFlowers. They'll even throw in a free vase. With a deal like this, you can take care of all the important people in your life and schedule that special birthday delivery weeks in advance. But hurry, this $19.99 birthday deal won't last forever, and the only way to get it is to go to ProFlowers.com. Look for the microphone in the upper right corner and enter the secret code FAST. One more time, write it down. ProFlowers.com, secret code FAST. Got it? ProFlowers.com, secret code FAST.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, if I said I was going to interview an author that had written a book called Unruly Men, you might even think of it as positive. Guys at a NASCAR race, college students whooping it up in Florida during spring break, or just guys at a bar going, yeah, you know how they do. Maybe even I do once in a while. Or I haven't in a long time. But what if I said the title of the book was Unruly Women? Unruly Women. That's a whole different concept of what we think of, how we can think of women's definitions, their roles in society. A lot of it's changed in the last couple generations, but still, it's a concept that kind of confounds what we quote expect of women. Well, that is the name of the book. It's Unruly Women: The Politics of Confinement and Resistance. It's a new edition of a book that was originally published in 1993. The author is Carlene Faith, and Carlene Faith has been a human rights activist for 5 decades. She's Canada's leading feminist sociologist on prisons. She's the author of numerous books on criminology and women's studies, and she's currently professor emerita at Simon Fraser University's School of Criminology in British Columbia, and we're reaching her at her office in Vancouver. Carlene Faith, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Well, thank you for having me, Peter.
There is a difference between men and women, isn't there?
Well, there is, yes. And when I talk about the unruly woman, I'm not talking about a woman who is a bad person at all, because many, many, many people who go to prison are not in any way bad people. And I don't know that we'll have time to talk about all the reasons I would say that. But I'm wondering if I could just read to you the first paragraph of the book, the very first paragraph.
Sure.
Would that be all right?
You know what?
I should
get more authors to not the acknowledgments, right? This is...
No.
I'm going to, in the introduction, The Unruly Woman.
It's the first paragraph. It's a short paragraph of the introduction.
This is...
And it'll sort of define for you what I mean by unruly woman.
Okay, that's great. Go ahead.
Okay, the unruly woman is the undisciplined woman. She is a renegade from the disciplinary practices which would mold her as a gendered being. She is the defiant woman who rejects authority which would subjugate her and render her docile. She is the offensive woman who acts in her own interests. She is the unmanageable woman who claims her own body, the whore, the wanton woman, the wild woman out of control. She is the woman who cannot be silenced. She is a rebel. She is trouble.
And that's the first paragraph of Carlene Faith's Unruly Women. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to sevenstories.com and my website, peterwerby.com, as well. There'll be a link. Well, she is trouble, and often a woman like that, like anybody who's transgressive, winds up in prison. And that's a lot of what your book, Unruly Women, is about. This is a question that is should be more specific, but see what you can do with it. Tell us about women in prison. That's not even a question, is it? But you're probably thinking, where to start?
Well, there are certain things that can be said, sort of pedestrian things, that anyone who has ever known anyone who went to prison is going to know this, namely that a woman who is white, who lives in an affluent suburb, who uses illegal drugs, who maybe shoplifts once in a while, just has an impulse to take the lipstick or to sneak an extra new blouse into her bag in the dressing room, that woman is not going to go to prison. She can steal and she can break the drug laws. She can do whatever she wants to do, pretty much. And when she gets picked up for one of those offenses, she's going to be processed very quickly and probably sent off to rehab. And people like me who go into prisons to do community work or to do research, we're not going to meet her. The women we're going to meet in prison are the women who do exactly the same kind of activity, but who do it in a poor neighborhood, who are women of color, who are women who really lack any of the resources to protect themselves against punishment. So we're definitely talking about a virtual caste system where you have to be poor, preferably of a minority status, to be able to qualify for prison. In other words, money protects, and certainly having any kind of social status likewise protects.
Well, go ahead.
If we just kept all the women out of prison who were there for drug offenses, the prison populations would decrease by half. We're really locking up people who are found guilty of very, very outmoded drug laws.
Well, I see in your book, Unruly Women, that women have become some of the best customers for the prison industrial complex, and that's correct.
That's right.
That tell us about that. That's strange. You would think why all of a sudden women are entering prisons at a more rapid rate than men.
Well, that's right, and the problem started in the 1970s when there was a slight increase in the numbers of women who were being charged with theft, because theft and drugs are the two most common reasons for people to end up in prison. Theft of one kind or another, that would include bad checks and so on. And those women, the women who were being accountable for the slight increase, well, not even always slight, because percentage-wise there had been so few that it didn't take very many cases to make a large increase in the numbers. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so people took that information, and the media especially, the media is very, very much accountable for this problem. They talked about the increase in the numbers of women who were being arrested and subsequently imprisoned, But they talked about it in such a way that it gave the impression that that women were committing a whole lot more violence. And that was not true. The women's rate of violence was not increasing. Now, simultaneous with this happening in the 1970s, there was also a very active women's liberation movement. And people were interpreting women's liberation to mean that everything that men did, women could do as well. And so it was assumed that this increase in the women's crime rate somehow related to violence, that women were somehow becoming these violent creatures that were lurking behind alleyways and ready to pounce on innocent passersby. That kind of image was generated all through the media throughout the United States. So it created this impression that, okay, women are committing all this crime, they're doing all this violence, all fictional, and so we've got to punish them just like we would punish a man. So any notion of leniency toward women was absolutely erased. Women have never actually been treated leniently unless they were very privileged women.
Well, I was going to say, how can we have a call for leniency? You know, there's probably, you've heard the phrase, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And certainly women, I mean, there is the fiction that women are treated more leniently by the criminal justice system in any country. That mythology always persists. But it's a very specific, very class-based group of women who are treated with leniency. A woman who has children and is married is going to be treated leniently. Most women who appear before the courts, even if they have children, which they commonly do, they don't generally have the protection of the middle class. They don't have a husband, etc.
Well, let me ask you this. If someone said to you that this uptick in women as criminals, women being incarcerated, you can bring it back to the 1960s and 1970s, and someone said, Carlene Faith, it's feminists like you that opened the gates of hell.
Well, it's definitely a backlash. I mean, I think that's absolutely true, because the courts do now say, okay, woman, man, it's all the same with me. You do the time, you commit the crime, you do the time. There is absolutely that attitude in the court, and it is true that a lot of women who probably could have in the past been regarded with a lot more understanding or compassion or leniency would never get that leniency starting in the 1970s and especially in the 1980s. The 1980s saw a huge growth spurt of the numbers of women who are being incarcerated. And at this point, of course, it's ballooned so fast that many more women are being incarcerated at a much higher rate than men are now. That's true.
That's not exactly what I meant, but here's maybe what I was making.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that was probably my fault. I always assume that if I didn't get the answer, I had a teacher used to write, good answer, but not to this question. But here, let me make it clear, and we'll go back to the first paragraph of the introduction to your book, Unruly Women, the Politics of Confinement and Resistance. And you say the unruly woman is the undisciplined woman. She is the woman who cannot be silent. She is a rebel. She is trouble. She is unmanageable. She is defiant. She rejects authority. She's offensive. That this probably, although there were women like that all through history when there was even the most repressive cultural regimes in place, and even today where women are like that, but the fact that feminism allowed women to be more expressive also gave rise to more unruly women, hence more women that are going to act out the same social scripts as men, including criminality.
Yeah. Well, it didn't actually work that way, because a person who is interested in women's liberation is not the same person who is going to be stealing stuff to feed her kids. The two things just don't go together, because to be liberated, just by definition, means to be independent. It means to have autonomy. It means to be able to govern your own life. And the women who are locked up are not in that position. They are very dependent. Sometimes they're dependent on drugs. Sometimes they're dependent on social services. Sometimes they're dependent on a pimp or another man for whatever reason, in whatever kind of relationship. So it's almost the complete opposite. The woman who is attracted to women's liberation is in no way a woman who is dependent on any of those things. She's a woman who is really striving to be in control of her life and to not be subject to those kinds of dependencies that invariably result in the abuse of herself. So,
well,
so there you go.
Okay. My guest is Carlene Faith, author of Unruly Women, The Politics of Confinement and Resistance. Another objection someone might make is that you're romanticizing common criminals. Well, I mean, that paragraph that I read part of and you read fully earlier,
right,
very
right.
romantic sounding, but ultimately it's someone that's ripping you off.
Right.
Tell me about that.
The truth is that I myself have probably, you know, I'm a very extroverted person, and I've been a professor, and I've been in the midst of hundreds, thousands of people all my life. I'm right there in the center of all kinds of stuff. And truly, I don't know that I have ever met a large group of people in any institution or any situation that included so many really likable people. There's such a grimness to the whole experience of having to go to prison. And yet, women who have a sense of humor thrive in prison.
Huh.
There is a kind of civility that extends through most prisons, and I've been in many, many, many of them. There are always going to be women who are so troubled that they do present some kind of a danger or a threat to others. But they're very, very rare. And what's happened in the media is that, especially in the film industry, is that you end up with these images of these horrible, gross, ugly, detestable women being shown on the screen in these fictional stories about prisoners. And you don't encounter that when you go to the prison. You encounter women who look like everybody else, many, many very beautiful women, many very cute, perky women, and women of every sort of physical description, of course, just a normal group of women. But amongst that group, you're going to find a lot of very likable personalities. A lot of really important friendships get formed in prison. So it's not at all like it's presented. You're not walking into a place where you've got all these monsters competing for attention and causing harm. It just isn't like that. The image comes from imitating what is perceived to be a man's prison with all the violence and so on. And those impressions are then transferred onto the female. If she commits crime, she must be like a guy, because that's a guy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get this convoluted layering of mythologies that just don't exist. The women in prison are very ordinary women. Most of them are mothers. Most of them are they're failures in the sense that they have not had any opportunities generally for education or for any kind of job training that would be useful to their lives. They have much lower education attainment levels than the population at large, and you know, very few have even finished high school. That's a significant thing, that all these women are coming there who don't have a high school education. And so on. So, no, I don't romanticize them, but I absolutely do get a kind of exhilarated, when I walk into a prison and I'm seeing women I know and others I'm meeting, and I do get a kind of exhilaration about, my God, you people are so resilient. You women are so strong on some level within you, and you provide each other with a lot of support. And yes, I see that woman across the room who looks like she'd like to stab somebody, but she probably won't. And if she does, it will be an uncommon experience within a woman's prison. Unlike in a men's prison, where I've also worked, I taught many, many years ago, I taught in a men's prison that had a reputation for extreme violence, Soledad Prison. And the atmosphere there and in other men's prisons I've been in is much more threatening, and it's a much more visceral sense of, I could get in trouble here, I could get hurt here. In the woman's prison, you're not going to experience that so much. You're going to have some of that, but not very much of it. Certainly nothing at all like being in a men's prison. So that ridiculous custom of the film industry of behaving as if all these women are really men, like they're men in women's disguise kind of thing, and that they behave with the same kind of unfettered violence, is just so wrong and so not true. So, yes, I would like to demythologize, to demystify who the woman is who goes to prison. She's a woman who's really down on her luck, and she might have made some choices that she regrets terribly. She might be in terrible pain. She might be suffering as a consequence of her crime, or it might be because of her suffering that she even got involved in something that wasn't legal, such as using a drug, an illegal drug. So the first thing that I want to see happen is for all people whose crime is using illegal substances to not be sent to prison, to not treat prison as in any way a solution for the problem of drug addiction. It's absurd.
That's
the last place you're going to get any help. You
sure.
need to be going into some kind of rehab. And if we were to do that, we would cut the prison population in half for women. And we would also then free up money that could go to education and job training and counseling and legal assistance, help with children, all kinds of stuff.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the women in prison films. Feminists have never been very pleased with the Hollywood presentation of women. And so in many ways, this is just on the continuum.
And that's the work that I did. I think I was the first one to do that work, and I'm glad that I suffered through all those many, 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 many hours of looking at these grotesque, they're caricatures. They're grotesque caricatures of men in women's clothing. That's what they are.
Give me some examples and put a time frame on this. When were you doing this and what?
These films have been going on for a very, very, very long time, and if you give me just a minute, I can give you a bunch of.
Well, go ahead, and I'll. Although we don't ever stop the recording, I'll just reintroduce you. My guest is Carlene Faith, and she is the author of Unruly Women: The Politics of Confinement and Resistance. It's published by Seven Stories Press, and you can go to sevenstories.com and just look for the book title, or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, and I'll have a link to Carlene Faith's book. Did you find the films you were looking for?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. So here are some titles of some of these films. The first one that made a big impression on me came out in 1950, and it was called Caged. And I thought it was an important film because it had such a great cast, names that the listeners may not recognize because they're so old and dead now, but Agnes Moorehead, Hope Emerson, Eleanor Parker. It was a really classic film, really well done, but it probably started, certainly there had been other films about women in prison prior to that, but that was the one that really did have a terrible, terrible effect on the reputation or on the imagery of women in prison.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm
but
think,
then,
you go ahead.
And then subsequently there was So Young, So Bad, it was another one that was a really well done film, but it again reinforced all those stereotypes. But then there were lots of films called Girls in Prison, Reform School Girl, Chain Gang Women, Chained Heat. Linda Blair was in that one, and that was in the 1980s. Chain Gang Women was in the 1970s. It's just gone on since
the
50s.
They all sound like B-movies, and it all seemed to have sort of
Yeah, most of them are.
I was going to say, they all seem to, at least from the titles, have sort of a sexual subtext. Am I correct?
Absolutely huge.
Yeah.
A huge sexual subtext where these, and they're usually presented as big, heavy dyke women who are going to attack all these sweet little feminine women. The lead role is generally played by a woman who is deemed to be innocent. She got there by mistake. She's usually blonde. She's usually white, and she's usually cowering, and she's terrified of all these big, black, frightening women who want to rape her or whatever. And that's what I'm talking about when I talk about imitating men's prison films with female characters who are like men in disguise. It's
mm-hmm.
just bizarre.
That's interesting because the one woman, at least this is just a single, well, that was women, was, what was it, I Want to Live with Susan Hayward, where she
so that's a whole different thing where they focus on one character and give you real feelings for that character.
But the
yeah,
ones you're talking about
No, I'm talking about these B-movies or wannabe movies made with good people like Linda Blair, but then they turn them into these horrible, horrible, they're virtually slasher movies. They're horrible.
Well, we have about 4 minutes left, and so I just want to get into a little to what prisons are like for women in the States. I know you're in Canada, but you've done a lot of work in the United States. And, the idea of me going to a men's prison is so frightening, I just can't even believe it.
Yeah.
Are women's prisons, you say there's not the violence level, but is...
Right.
What are they like? Are they fearful places as well?
Well, there are a few variations on the theme, because there are some very progressive or just simply conscious or conscientious wardens or superintendents, as they're often called now, who do want to present women with some options for constructive uses of their time and who do try to bring in educational or vocational programs. So there are some places where there's a little bit of relief from the general description I could offer. But generally speaking, a woman who goes into prison is going to be treated as if she were a child. She's going to be infantilized. She's going to have great difficulty maintaining contact with her family if she has a family. She is going to be subject to ridiculous jobs. They have what they call vocational housekeeping. Guess what that is? Cleaning toilets, cleaning the floors. Or you're going to be in the laundry room, or you're going to be in the kitchen, which is often the most detested job because it's very, very hot, and you're dealing with vats of really gross food and so on. So you're going to have a very unpleasant routine every single day, and you're not going to have any privileges. Very often they're going to do cell searches where they take everything, where they go just rampage through all the cell units and take out everybody's stuff. So you might lose pictures of your children. You might lose whatever little special mementos you have of your family. Your emotional life is going to be really, really difficult.
Carlene, Faith, let me just interrupt you because we only have about 2 minutes left. And here's what I want to ask as kind of a final question, and my apologies for interrupting you. It's very possible that a listener could be saying, hey, too bad. They broke the law. What are they supposed to get? A country club? They want, you know, on my dime, on my taxpayer dime. What does the two things? Maybe you can roll these in together. Why should a so-called law-abiding? These are just the ones that haven't got caught, right? Law-abiding citizen care about the status of women or anyone else who's broken the law, even to the extent that that's an extended punishment, literally a penitentiary, And the final thing is, what do we want to change to? So go ahead.
Well, what we want to change it to, a big thing would be what I just said, to stop incarcerating people whose only crime is using drugs, possessing an illegal drug. Stop sending those people to prison and address the drug issue. Most of those women, the reason to care about them is that most of them have themselves been victims of abuse. Most of them have not harmed another person. Most of them have been victims of poverty. Most of them have been victims of racism. And most of them, like I said, to repeat because it can't be said often enough, most of them have been victims of male violence in their lives as children and as adults. So we're looking here at a population of victims, but they are victims who fought back in some way. They said, okay, I'm going to use a drug because it makes me feel better. Or, okay, I'm going to steal something because I can't bear this poverty. I can't feed my kids. A woman, what in the United States are called Native Americans, one woman said to me, my kid can't afford shoes for school. I don't have any money to put new shoes on him. I'm stealing them. That's it. My kid's going to have shoes for school. So those kinds of issues really need to be confronted, which is to say poverty and racism really need to be confronted. Those are the issues that determine who is going to go to prison and who is not. And it doesn't have anything to do with being bad people. Yes, you'll find a few bad people in there. That is, women who are willing to harm others. But they are not at all the bulk of the population, to the contrary.
I want to thank you so much for being on the broadcast. The book, and it was almost by necessity that I was cutting Carlene Faith off at different times, because this book just treats so many different aspects, literally, as the subtitle says, The Politics of Confinement and Resistance. It's a new edition of Unruly Women. It's published by Seven Stories Press. I'm sorry, by Seven Stories Press. It's sevenstories.com. Also, a link at my website, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. Carlene Faith, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Radio.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Everybody in Ferndale and Salon Retro in Royal Oak.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
One size does not fit all, especially when you're talking about your mortgage. Introducing the all-new Yourgage from Quicken Loans. Yourgage is better than a traditional mortgage because it conforms to your goals. In fact, it's the only home loan that allows you to custom design your term anywhere between 8 to 30 years. Here's how it works. Let's say you've got 8 years left on your mortgage and you want to refinance to a lower interest rate. The Quicken Loans 8-year fixed Yourgage can help. It keeps your term short and lowers your monthly payment. Just call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. The Quicken Loans Yourgage. It's a home loan on your terms. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide licensing number 3030. Other restrictions apply. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425.
Do you have a disability that prevents you from working? Then you may be entitled to collect thousands of dollars of Social Security benefits. If you've been medically disabled for at least 12 months and previously worked 5 of the last 10 years, you may qualify to receive thousands of dollars paid directly to you every month. Just call Disability Benefits Alliance at 1-877-941-8822. Disability Benefits Alliance can cut through government red tape and help you receive Social Security disability.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis.